It's a mind manipulation technique that avoids not only opposition to what is the goal of the manipulators, it actually manipulates people to demand they do what they want to do anyway. You start by secretly creating a problem in the world. You then use the media, which isn't difficult, to wind up public opinion in relation to your manufactured problem to the point where public opinion utters the classic words, something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it? And at that point, those who created the problem and got someone else to be blamed for it wound up that public reaction, then openly in the public arena, in the parliaments of the world, in the newspapers and on the television, offer the solutions to the problems they have created.
Year-end wrap-up we promised you. Well, that's the kind of year it was, gang. In 1971, 18-year-olds received the right to vote. It will not do them much good, however, since they did not receive the right to register. And in the field of ecology, a man in California went on a diet of DDT only, just to prove it was harmless. He's apparently in good health, although his top wings and hind legs don't flap in unison anymore. 1971 was also the year the Beatles broke up. And if you play their last album backwards at slow speed, you can hear a voice saying, dummy, you're playing it backwards at slow speed.
It's your hippy-dippy weatherman.
Hey, baby, what's happening? Que pasa? Que what you call your pasa? Well, it was really a big year in weather in 1971. We had a little bit of everything. The year started off real cold. For about 3 months, it was freezing, man. Then it started getting nice, real nice. And it got nicer and nicer until finally we had a long hot spell. Lasted right through the summer. Then all that nice weather came back again until a couple of months ago when it started getting cold. Looks like 1972 is starting in the same crazy pattern as a year ago.
And finally, 1971 was a year of continuing hostility between men and nations. Here is the War Scoreboard, brought to you as a public service by men of goodwill everywhere.
In 1971, on the War Scoreboard, 8 civil wars,
6 outside aggressions,
6 internal upheavals,
10 counterinsurgencies,
21 violent demonstrations,
30 warlike acts,
906 hostile incidents,
10 armed raises,
18 deliberate provocations,
61 threats to national security,
9 dangerous escalations,
2 military confrontations,
62 heightenings of tension,
24 heated exchanges,
12 belligerent moves,
17 reprisals,
3 powder kegs,
and 2 tinderboxes.
And an ultimate...
The strength of a nation's currency is based on the strength of that nation's economy. And the American economy is by far the strongest in the world. Accordingly, I have directed the Secretary of the Treasury to take the action necessary to defend the dollar against the speculators. I have directed Secretary Connally to suspend temporarily the convertibility of the dollar into gold or other reserve assets, except in amounts and conditions determined to be in the interest of monetary stability and in the best interest of the United States. Now, what does this action, which is very technical, what does it mean for you? Let me lay to rest the bugaboo of what is called devaluation. If you want to buy a foreign car or take a trip abroad, market conditions may cause your dollar to buy slightly less. But if you are among the overwhelming majority of Americans who buy American-made products in America, your dollar will be worth just as much tomorrow as it is today. The effect of this action, in other words, will be to stabilize the dollar.
But the choice is yours. You can pay me now.
Or pay me later.
This is a special date in history. In 1971. It's a date that I refer to quite frequently, and now 43 years later, we are still struggling with some of the conditions laid down on that particular date by our president, Richard Nixon. It wasn't a total surprise because many of us had anticipated it because we knew that the dollar had to be depreciated and devalued on the international markets and that the gold price would never be held at $35 an ounce. There was a world market price for gold and it had broken out. At the same time, American people at that particular time were not even allowed to own gold. But a couple years ago, Forbes magazine wrote this up on the anniversary of August 15th, and they described it this way. They said August 15th is a date which has lived in infamy. That's how strongly they describe this day. Infamy, shameful, criminal, and outrageous. And I can't disagree with that. Matter of fact, those words are every bit as strong or maybe stronger than the words I have used. But it was a devastating day. It also ushered in something very historic. But for 43 years now, we have operated worldwide on a dollar fiat standard. It never had happened before. It's a currency like this has existed in individuals' countries, but they end. But the collusion of all the nations put together in the IMF, they have been able to manage to hold this together by just building a bigger financial bubble, and that is essentially what's happening. And the world is engulfed with this, and the world is suffering the consequences of this. But Nixon on that night promised great things. He was referencing the Vietnam War. He says, I'm going to wind this down. This was 1971. The war finally ended in 1975 when Saigon fell. But he referenced that, and he was going to usher in an age of peace and prosperity. Sounds wonderful, and of course that should be a worthy goal. But his assessments were pure Keynesianism. It was in that period of time that Nixon said, we're all Keynesians now. So his statement, his speech, tells you about the thought processes of Keynesian economists. So his assessment was that the real problem and threat to the dollar at that time was all due to the speculators. If you didn't have speculators out there buying and selling and anticipating the so-called price of gold, this wouldn't happen. Gold is stable and you don't have to worry about it, but it's only the speculators. He was concerned about inflation, certainly, and he wanted to deal with that. He was very precise. We have to deal with inflation. But guess what he did? He put on wage and price controls. Freeze wages and freeze prices, and that's supposed to be a solution. Of course, that made everything much worse. It created shortages instantaneously within days. Although we as American citizens weren't allowed to own gold, foreigners could. They could come down and put $35 down and get an ounce of gold, and they were draining our gold reserves. We had over 500 million ounces of gold and went down to less than 300. But though we had promised that we would always repatriate that in gold, so foreigners had a right to do it, and that's why they put trust in the dollar. But the French led the way, and they said, we've had enough. We're getting your dollars, but we don't like them, and we want our gold. And that's when Nixon put his foot down, and the saying was he closed the gold window, no more gold would come out. In a way, it's a declaration of bankruptcy that we can't, defend our position and pay our bills. And yet, we've been borrowing the money and we've been fooling the people and we've continued this process. Their side might argue, see, your concerns were all wrong. You said it would be a disaster. But I tell you what, we've just built up a lot more problems. And in the 70s, they were horrendous. Then there was a psychological move more for inflation. Today it's more deflationary, although the overriding issue is inflating the currency, printing too much. That's what made the Bretton Woods Agreement end, is the fact they printed too much money. Now they're doing it 10 times faster. Our economy is not recovering, and the world is suffering from this. This is why there's a move on in the world today to find a substitute for the dollar, and it will come. The end stages are unknown. They may come quickly in a few months or in a few years, but it is not sustainable. I was on a committee called the Legislative Action Committee. So every Monday at lunchtime, we would have lunch together, and the National Chamber of Commerce would soon send down their marching orders. What's important today and what is our position? So the marching orders of that particular day had to do with Bretton Woods. And to my surprise and shock, was the Chamber of Commerce. I didn't have a full understanding of how businesses really operated. They came down really super happy with this. They thought this was just great. You know, get rid of that gold standard, print all the money you want, freeze the prices, put on tariffs. So they were excited and they supported it. The other thing on that Monday, which would have been August 16th, 1971, the stock market went up in one day faster than it had ever gone up before that, which meant the financial markets and the investors liked it as well. And I thought, holy man, am I off track? Have I been misled about economic policy? But in the same breath, it was the Austrian economist that predicted from the very beginning, including Henry Hazlitt in 1945, he said the Bretton Woods Agreement wouldn't work. It was just structured wrong. It wasn't a real gold standard. It was a pseudo gold standard. And he predicted the United States would print too much money, and then it would break down.
Let's talk about some of the recent developments in the currency war, which, by the way, I think the United States is going to win. And, of course, when it comes to a currency war, the last thing you want to do is win, because the winner is, in fact, the biggest loser.
You make a very important point. A lot of people say the U.S. dollar is not backed by anything. It actually is backed by one thing, which is confidence. If people have confidence in it, they think it's money, then it's money. The problem is if they lose confidence, then it can cease to be money very quickly. It can collapse very quickly. Now, the problem with confidence is it's fragile. It's very easily lost. Once it's lost, it's very difficult to regain. And that's something the Fed doesn't understand. The Fed, the Treasury, other branches of government that are using the dollar as a weapon, exactly as you described, they take confidence for granted. They assume because the dollar is king, it will always be king, nothing can stop it. And so they, as you say, throw their weight around, but they're actually in the process of undermining the dollar. They're giving the rest of the world reasons to head for the exit. China wants to get off under the dollar. They're buying gold. That's very clear. Russia wants to get off from the dollar so they're not victimized in the financial war. Saudi Arabia wants to get off under the dollar because we don't guarantee their security anymore. And there's a lot else going on. The Swiss are joining in. So it doesn't happen overnight. It happens in small stages. But at the end, in the end game, it could happen very quickly.
Yeah,
and any investor who doesn't have some gold as an insurance policy is taking enormous risk.
I want to, of course, talk a little bit about gold. And first of all, what about internationally? If the world really wants to get out from under the dollar, which, of course, is the single largest reserve currency, I mean, not as big as it was, I mean, you would think that they would want to be building up their gold reserves, that the countries that have the biggest dollar reserves would have the biggest vested interest in accumulating as much gold as they can to replace the dollar as a reserve backing up their own currencies.
Well, they actually are. That's going on. I talk about this in my book, The Death of Money, and China is a very good example. Now, China officially says they have about 1,000 tons of gold, but we all know that's not true. They have some number. No one knows exactly what it is. But you can make a reasonable estimate that they actually have 3 or 4 or perhaps even 5,000 tons of gold. Now, that's not just guesswork. How do we know that? Well, we know what their mining output is. It's over 400 tons a year. We know what their imports to Hong Kong are. They're about 700 tons a year. So you add that up, there's 1,100 tons. And I have information I talk about in my book that they're bringing gold in actually through military convoys coming in through Central Asia that could be coming from actually Russia or Kazakhstan or elsewhere, so add that to the mix. So they're getting probably 1,500 tons a year. This has been going on for 5 years, so that's 7,500 tons. What we don't know, how much of that is going to private investment in China, how much of that is going to the government. We don't know that number, but just use half and half as a first approximation. So right there, that would add over 3,000 tons to China's reserves. So they're probably close to 4,000 tons. Now, there's been a lot of speculation that the reason they're doing this is they want to launch a gold-backed yuan currency to defeat the dollar. That's not going to happen. That's not even close. But what you do is you build up a pile of gold. So now the Chinese actually want a stable dollar. They would love a stable dollar. But if the U.S. tries to devalue the dollar, tries to cheapen the dollar through inflation, remember, every 10% of dollar inflation is a $300 billion wealth transfer from China to the United States. So if we cheapen the dollar with inflation, they'll lose money on the paper, but they'll make money on the gold. Yeah. So they're building a hedge position. They're not done yet.
And, of course, for the hedge to work, gold has to move up spectacularly.
Correct.
You have to have a very, very big, because their gold position is going to be very small relative to their dollar position. But if gold moves enough to offset the decline in the purchasing power of the dollar, and I think it's interesting because I think that's why China is trying to really lie about how much gold it has and how much it's been buying. Because if the truth were out there on how much gold they have, I think the price would already go up. And you know, so if you really want to buy something, you don't want people to know how badly you want it or how much you want, because they're going to raise the price. So I think China is trying to quietly buy as much gold as they can, because they need a lot of gold, because they've got a lot of dollars. So they're trying to buy as much as they can, as cheaply as they can.
Correct.
So they lie about how much they have. I think we also lie, but maybe we pretend we have more than we do. That could be, you know, so we say we have all this gold, and maybe we don't, and China claims they barely have any, but they probably have a lot more.
Well, I think we have good reason to believe we have the physical gold. Now, is it leased out? Yes, that's the thing. Now, so it's hypothecated. We have the physical gold in Fort Knox and West Point, where we say we do, but it is leased out. The gold manipulation, by the way, is so blatant at this point. If I were the manipulator, I'd be embarrassed, because it's very clear. To me, that's non-debatable. And also, Bronchus Metz, a professor at NYU Stern School, has done some excellent research on this. She's an expert on this. There are other published studies. So this isn't something we have to speculate about anymore.
But why isn't there a bigger uproar? And what do you think is going on when Germany basically says, look, your guys are storing our gold. We'd like half of it back.
Right.
And then we come back and say, okay, we'll give you half back, but it's going to take like 10 years.
Right.
And here's our timetable.
Right.
And at the end of the first year, we give them one-tenth of what we promised we're going to give them. And now all of a sudden they've changed their mind and say, okay, we don't need it. You can keep it.
That's another thing that's not very well understood. The dirty little secret there is Germany doesn't want the gold back. They asked for it, but that was only because it was a political issue. In September 2013, Angela Merkel was up for election. There was a minority party that was making noise about this, saying, why is our gold in New York? Why are we risking? The U.S. could confiscate it, which I think we might at the end of the day, in desperation. So they wanted. So that was only announced to appease that party to help Merkel's coalition. Once she won the election, they didn't need those guys anymore.
Human evolution was at a turning point. Natural selection, the process by which the strongest, the smartest, the fastest reproduced in greater numbers than the rest, a process which had once favored the noblest traits of man, now began to favor different traits. Most science fiction of the day predicted a future that was more civilized and more intelligent. But as time went on, things seemed to be heading in the opposite direction, a dumbing down. How did this happen? Evolution does not necessarily reward intelligence. With no natural predators to thin the herd, it began to simply reward those who reproduced the most and left the intelligent to become an endangered species.
No confession, all is known, all is known. New world order, you shall be shown.
Our topic tonight is a more sober one, of concern to publishers as well as editors. I want to talk about our common responsibilities in the face of a common danger. The events of recent weeks may have helped to illuminate that challenge for some, but the dimensions of its threat have loomed large on the horizon for many years. Whatever our hopes may be for the future, for reducing this threat or living with it, there is no escaping either the gravity or the totality of its challenge to our survival and to our security. A challenge that confronts us in unaccustomed ways in every sphere of human activity. This deadly challenge imposes upon our society two requirements of direct concern, both to the press and to the president. Two requirements that may seem almost contradictory in tone, but which must be reconciled and fulfilled if we are to meet this national peril. I refer first to the need for far greater public information, and second, to the need for far greater official secrecy. The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control.
Those of you who have put your full faith in the fiat currency system have a rude awakening coming. One day you will wake up, markets will be in turmoil. Headlines will read, dollar run, dollar collapse, the end of the dollar. You see, like all fiat currencies, inevitably the dollar will return to its inherent value of zero. Government education has conditioned the population to believe that inflation is a phenomenon, a normal consequence of living in a modern economy. However, this is not true. Inflation, by definition, is an increase in the currency supply. This increase is a direct result of central banks. Central banks act as a cartel for the big banks. Much like OPEC represents oil-producing nations, the Federal Reserve represents large banks like J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and HSBC. This banking cartel, partnered with the U.S. government, has created an unsustainable situation where trillions are created to bail out banks. Interest rates are suppressed, causing massive imbalances in our economy, and price inflation is underreported. The end is near. This system of fraud is on the verge of imploding. Those that have their faith
of our lack of respect and our loss of liberty and lack of concern and defense of our republic, and we're suffering the consequences. This is what we're talking about. How can we reverse this trend? I think we have to understand how it happened, what the problems were, and what we have to aim for. But we've had a lot of problems because of this. Number one, economic problems, because they do not understand the Constitution and economics on monetary. I mean, it is very clear what we should be doing. The founders knew and understood something about inflation. The runaway inflation of the continental dollar was devastating to the economy, so they were explicit. They said no emitting of bills of credit, no printing money, no paper money, and it only gold and silver.
Hear the thunder? America is under assault by enemies foreign and domestic. Political correctness has silenced thought, and most Americans are programmed by the corporatist media into a false left-right paradigm. The truth is, there is an entrenched duopoly that controls the electoral process, so that whether you choose a jackass or an elephant, you get the same old, a new tyrant's face to front for the unelected and connected transnationalists. Congress is nothing but a rubber stamp for K Street-drafted autocracy under color of law on behalf of those who control the money supply and the foreign policy, irrespective of which party is in power. America is a police state at home and an empire abroad, yet most Americans still think they're free because the money is flowing. Hedonism and entertaining distractions abound, and we live in fear of the most recent monsters, both real and fabricated. Is this the vision of the Founding Fathers? Is this truly the liberty for which the brave have bled down through the ages? No. This is nothing but a facsimile of freedom with a deceitful veneer of moral courage. So long as the secret owners of the Federal Reserve control the money, credit, and economy of these United States, our military might will be used to secure their fortunes across the globe, shed the blood of innocents, and tarnish the red stripes of those who fought for liberty and the white stars that shine on the field of blue, unwavering champions of the good, the true, and the beautiful. Mistakes are often useful lessons from which to learn, make amendments, and progress to ever higher achievement. But sometimes the mistakes are fatal, and correction is extremely elusive, if possible at all. As Americans, we've made several fatal mistakes, but the damage from the wounds hasn't killed this grand experiment in liberty yet. We are far too close for comfort, and if a drastic course correction is not undertaken soon, we shall be no more. The longer we wait to revitalize and actuate our principles of liberty and virtue, the more extreme the required correction will need to be, and the unavoidable harm more severe. In 1971, we made the fatal mistake of, quote, closing the gold window and ending the international pseudo-gold standard imposed at Bretton Woods in 1944. This started a series of disastrous chain reactions that have resulted in the collapse we're witnessing right now. In international trade, the U.S. dollar has enjoyed reserve currency status because after World War II, we were the only functioning industrial economy. In order to maintain the financial hegemony when we were bankrupt under a pile of debt and excess, we switched to the petrodollar by renting out our military might for a piece of all global energy transactions. This gave the U.S. global hegemonic control in the midst of a Cold War with the Soviet Union, forcing them to be more belligerent and eventually collapse. Then we managed to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory by becoming an imperial bully instead of the most competitive free market and good neighbor. Now we are reaping the whirlwind of a pyramid scheme foisted upon us that the rest of the world is rejecting. And our neocon foreign policy, perpetrated by both parties, is leading us to start wars all over the planet to salvage a dead financial system, much like the Republican Party that has abandoned conservative principles for war and usury. This is the end game. What comes next depends on what you do now. The Malaysian airliner shot down by Putin, with no evidence that he shot it down, has disappeared, just like the first one. Instead, we're pounded with riots and looting in Ferguson and a hug fest between the current neocon bitch and her replacement Hillary, the neocon's neocon. Meanwhile, the game of risk plays out across the globe, and it appears that the bear and the dragon are winning. Governments lie. Remember, the Japanese imperial government was telling the Japanese people that the Americans were defeated, even as the nukes were dropping. A population pitted against itself seeks the salve of social cohesion against a foreign enemy or devolves into chaos. We just may get a bit of both, because the American sheep have closed their eyes, save when they're glued to their telescreens. As we appear to be divided between a false right and a false left, we are in fact divided between those who believe in limited government and a virtuous society and those who practice hedonism and prefer anarchy or tyranny. Ordered liberty needs government as part of our society to facilitate the protection of our rights, limited in scope and subordinate to the people, of virtuous people who exercise self-restraint and accept the duty to be free. Liberty is not license, and rights cannot be exercised without commensurate responsibilities. Liberty is practically gone because those of us on the, quote, right fight amongst ourselves over quibbling garbage instead of uniting on the broad principles upon which we largely agree, restoring sound money, free markets, religious and civil liberties, and a sensible foreign policy of non-interventionism, leading by example and prepared to defeat all enemies at any time. If America falls, don't blame someone else. It is our fault for allowing it. Our fatal mistakes are our own. We have allowed the uber-national corporatists to use media to fearfully manipulate us, plunder us with their financial malfeasance, and instill fear with their festering militarism abroad and militarized police at home. The chief control tool is democratism, which does not further liberty. It merely appeases the fickle mobs by satisfying disordered passions while binding them with invisible chains of their own choosing. If you want America to be the land of the free and the home of the brave, you actually have to be brave and desire to be free. Our fatal mistakes can be corrected, and the cost will be great. But the cost of infighting amongst those of us who love the old republic and the Constitution is far, far greater. And history will recall that we are the people who witnessed the end of America, where men were once free. Some will wait to see what happens. Others will be wondering what happened. If you're listening to Liberty's Thunder, you're one of the few who is willing to take action and influence what is about to happen. America is on the verge of fading away, not with a bang, but with a whimper. Sure, it will look normal. The stars and stripes will fly, barbecues and ball games and baseball. But when the prepared chaos is unleashed, the mob will clamor for a savior to restore order and trade precious liberty for false security. This is not that which we inherited. It is that which our forebears fought against. Your valor will not be rewarded if you stand alone. We need to grow our ranks, get more Americans involved, realize the situation is dire, and know that only the bold will see liberty or death. Either work hard now to restore constitutional governance for a free and virtuous nation by taking the right wing of the Welfare Warfare Party of the District of Corruption and restoring sound money, free markets, religious and civil liberties, and a sensible foreign policy of non-interventionism backed by the biggest, baddest military on the planet. Or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who perpetuate an empire abroad and a police state at home. To defeat the lawless hordes of cultural Marxists, statists, collectivists, oligarchs, Keynesians, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists, first, you must crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex Goldmember, broadcasting to you from the District of Debt, the Imperial City, Captain Cave Gold.
Oh boy, and I'm Trog, your co-host. hey, I got an idea. Change your name to Doom and Gloom. Because if you don't follow us and you just walk into one of our shows midway or one show and haven't listened to other shows or been part of the groups that we spend a massive amount of time educating people on, then I can see how people could perceive that. I think it's really important, and we've been talking about this for a long time, and your opening clip was excellent because you had a hodgepodge of things in there, including some weird stuff in the beginning I didn't understand. But, you know, Dr. Ron Paul is probably – yeah, I know. I'm being facetious. But Dr. Ron Paul has probably been one of the greatest advocates for sound money in this country. And yet he has been demonized his whole career. And it's sad because he's absolutely spot on. And, you know, if you follow, I mean, you and I are, you know, particularly myself, you know, I just spent half the day while I was working in my yard and working out and doing some things. I spent half the day listening to a slew of Maloney clips. And what a, you know, I mean, they just have a great site, Hidden Secrets of Money, and very educational, very simple for somebody who doesn't even understand the economy or how money started and what is the difference between money and currency and, you know, what happened to the gold and all that. They have a slew of incredible videos that they've produced, and they do a very good job at it. And then, you know, you got Schiff, and then you got, you know, Rickards and a bunch of other guys. But those are definitely, you know, the top guys that I tend to follow because they get it. But, you know, the reason they get it is they're honest. That's the problem in this country. You know, most of the people who live in this country in today's world, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of good, honest, hardworking people. But if you're just making a wage and paying taxes, you're part of the problem. You know, I've been teaching free enterprise since I was in my 20s. You know, get out of debt. You know, quit buying stuff on credit. You know, get in business for yourself. Even if you have a job, get a business for yourself. You know, be part of the system. Either use it or lose it. It's just like when my son and I did the series of Second Amendment shows that we did. You know, use it or lose it. You can't just be somebody who posts about it on Facebook and rah, 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 I'm pro Second Amendment. If you don't own it, you know, if you don't practice it, if you're not part of that system, then you're never going to have the passion. You know, you're just not, you're just the audience. You know what I mean? That's picking a side. We're back to that concept of right-left paradigm, which is just a game. But in terms of economics, it is a really confusing thing to people who don't understand it. And most people's eyes, I'm sure, just gloss over sometimes when you and I get into stuff. And we try not to be overbearing or, you know, over-analytical with data because that just blows people's brains out of the water. But study the basics, because if you don't understand economics, then you're part of exactly why we're where we're at today. I was having a conversation with a family member, brilliant, you know, 155 IQ scientist family member who's lived, you know, a lot of years. And we were having a conversation about economics, and I said something about the Fed and inflation. And he said to me, as the elder in the room, well, inflation's a natural thing. And I looked at him and I said, you're part of the problem. Now, you don't like talk like that to your elders, but he is. Because I've said this before, I said it on the last show, a lot of why we're where we're at in this country today comes from my parents' generation. They were good people. They went through the Second World War and the Korean War. They came home and they went to work and they got educations. A lot of them grew, most they grew up in the Depression, and they put hunkered down. They believed in, you know, American pie, red, white, and blue. America's the moral country of the world, and we just saved the world from the fascists and rah rah rah, and they lived their lives, you know, with a dream to lift themselves to a higher level in life. And most of them did. It's probably more per cap income or wealth savings in that generation than any other generation alive right now, because they came out of the Depression and big wars, and so they were very thrift. But here's the problem. They thought they had arrived. They thought the world, America, was good. They thought we were virtuous. They thought we were the virtuous country of the world. And so they focused on living the American dream, and they never finished the fight, or they took a pause from the fight because they had been in all these wars. Whatever the case may be, you know, it was a Leave It to Beaver generation, you know, where the biggest problems you had in school with kids were kids talking in line or chewing gum. You know, now it's like, oh, God, who got stabbed today, you know? And you got metal detectors, you know, coming into schools and police or armed guards. I mean, our society has crumbled. And a lot of the reason that happened, of course, that was a planned event, but a lot of reason that happened is good people weren't paying attention. They were oohing and aahing through the 60s and all those dirty hippies and isn't it terrible and blah, 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 but they didn't get involved. Who got involved were the liberals who wanted to transform this country. And the, you know, the concept that money grows on trees, these people believe, oh, we just got to tax more and steal it from the rich and, you know, and it'll never run out. Like, you know, all these programs, these socialist programs, you know, they just kept expanding that because their theory is not sound money. Their theory is there ain't no gold backing anything. You know, you have deficit spending in government, which means you vote for people who will give you shit and promise you more, and then you vote them back into office, and they keep spending more money than the government takes in, and then they go to the Fed, which is a private bank, and really, for all intents and purposes of our Constitution, is illegal, and then the Fed prints more money and lends it to the government, and lends it to the banks, and then the government gets their piece, and the Fed gets wealthier, or the people own the Fed, and wealthier and wealthier and wealthier and wealthier. The richest families in the world, you know, are basically control this fake economic system that we are in the middle of crashing again. And you say, well, I don't feel it yet, and the stock market's good, Chris. No, it's not. The stock market, if you study it and you listen to people like Schiff or Rickards or, you know, whoever else, you'll find out that most of the stock activity is just companies rebuying their own stock. You know, it's just this cycle of, you know, of gambling. And you know, so what if it's reached 16,000 or 17,000? What the hell does it mean? How's the price of gas? How's the price of milk? How's the price of meat? You know? I mean, how's your life doing? Who cares about the stock market? It's a fake monopoly game anyway. You know, it's people borrowing cheap money or, you know, very low interest money, cheap money they call it, and because the Fed's printing it and dumping it in the market at basically zero interest and has been doing it for 5.5 years, And then there, you know, it's all this speculation, you know, speculative trade. It's everybody taking risk with your life again. You know, you think 2008 was bad? The bubble that led to 2008 is about a tenth of the size of the bubbles that we have now. In 5.5 years, this is what they've done. Here's the scary part about these cycles, is we keep doing the same crap over and over and over. And the cycles are getting shorter. Have you noticed that? For people who invest, they get shorter and they're getting shorter. And pretty soon, it stops. Every fiat currency ever in the history of the world, which means a paper economy of money just dumped into the system without any kind of solid long-term value behind it, like gold or commodities or whatever, has failed. Every one of them. In fact, when the U.S. took over the reserve currency of the world in the Bretton Woods time era, that one's already failed. In 1971, when Nixon took us off the gold standard, that current system failed. And then the next one was set in place, and that was the wheeling and dealing, especially with Saudi on the petrodollar. The thing of it is, where we have been through the years is we would have a crash and a recovery and a crash and a recovery and a crash and a recovery, and people would, you know, notch up a little bit and get another job, and then money was good again, and then they were making money again. Housing would go up, and, you know, and people were making money, and then the market and blah, blah, blah. Well, this time, nothing's changed, except the people at the top keep accumulating more and more and more and more. Everything that Occupy Wall Street talked about, or their complaint was true, you know. And unfortunately, their solution was wrong. And it frustrates me when people blame the free markets, because none of this is free markets. We don't live in a free market. Now, what will happen is probably not going to be very fun. But the thing that has really, really, really been something that just came out of left field in something you and I were actually chatting about today was inter-BRICS stage right. Because for years and years and years and years, especially since post-World War II, you know, the whole world was blown to hell. And the U.S. had all this money and productivity because we were safe. We didn't get blown up. And we had all these factories and productivity, and people came home from the war, and we had money and wealth and blah, blah, blah. And plus, we printed money and borrowed money. But we also spent a lot of money, sent it out into the world. So the world was flush with U.S. dollars. You know, and loans, most of them I don't think ever got paid back. Loans to these countries that got demolished to help them rebuild. And, you know, we're going to rebuild democracy across the world, blah, blah, blah. Well, when they needed to put together a reserve currency for the world, the U.S. was the only stable currency out there at that time with a machine, industrial machine, and natural resources behind it. So it was kind of like default. The U.S. got the job. Well, here's the problem. That's a responsibility. And what we did was we started waging war after war after war after war after war, and then you kept voting in these politicians that kept raising the debt ceiling and raising, you know, the deficit spending and promising more and more social programs and more this and more that. And pretty soon, the only thing that could keep us alive was the fact that we had that company, and we also pushed our industry out of the country. So what would happen is we would buy cheap shit from other countries, but the only way we could buy it was to sell them our bad debt. I mean, it's really the most insane thing in the world when you stop for a minute and think about it. We have cheap crap at Walmart because China would continue to buy our bad debt. Now, how's that for an economic plan? Well, we're at the tail end of those 40-year cycles, you know, for fiat currencies, and here we are. The problem is, like you and I were talking about earlier, is countries were so embedded in the U.S. banking system, you know, the IMF and the World Bank and Bank of International Settlements and the Fed, you know, controlled everything, that people didn't have an exit. So they were just stuck with, like, going, well, God, if we want to do trade with the largest consumer market in the world, then we got to buy another, you know, $10 billion worth of their bad debt, and they had no choice. It was just this forever. It's kind of like a drug addict and a drug dealer. where do you go? If you stop, you go OD, and your system crashes. Then, not too many years ago, actually, six, seven years ago, China, Russia, and several other countries get together and say, you know what? These Americans are insane, and they're going to crash the system again. And they worked, you know, they're part of the IMF, and they said, look, you know, the IMF needed reforms. They needed a different balance of voting shares, blah, blah, blah. The U.S. was blocking it because we wanted to be the sole superpower in the world, and we wanted to be able to bully anybody or sanction anybody or reward anybody based on what they did for us. And it was imbalanced, especially with Russia's climb and China's climb and India's climb economically. A lot of these countries were still growing while we were in a zero-growth economy. And you know what's funny about a zero-growth economy? That's on top of all the money the Fed was dumping into the economy, and you get zero. If that doesn't tell you something, I mean, sometimes some of this stuff you just got to sit back and take a look at it and go, oh, wow, I never thought of it that way. Well, think more. You know, learn this stuff because it's coming to an end. And the thing is that when we lose half the world population, and I, in fact, I was watching a video today, and the guy was doing a timeline at the speed at which countries around the world are decoupling from the U.S. dollar. We're talking like 23 different countries decoupling from the U.S. dollar in like a couple months. Now, nobody ever would have taken that before except for two things. One, the BRICS Bank, the BRICS Consortium, this group of countries that are powerful enough finally to get up and shake it off and say, we're going to do our own thing. Screw you. You're not going to work with this. You're not going to fix your problems. You're not going to get politicians in there that aren't going to, you know, that aren't going to screw your country. You guys, you know, the U.S. is making no concessions, no changes, and they keep bullying the world and sanctioning countries and launching wars, and we want out from underneath that insanity. And so it's happening. And the thing that Maloney said in one of his newer videos, so conferences, is he said the speed that it's happening is almost hyperspeed now. It was this country and this deal and, you know, on a new oil deal between Russia and this country or Russia and Iran or China and Iran, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden it was like, bam, 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 23 countries. And all this, you know, I call him the Energizer Bunny, you know, President Xi of China. You know, every 3 days he's in another country cutting a whatever, 5, 10, 15, 20, $30 billion trade deal off U.S. dollar. Here's the thing you have to know about this for the people who don't understand this. The only thing that allows the U.S. to have cheap products, fairly cheap energy, I mean, even though it's higher than it should, you know, than we like, it's still cheaper than Europe. You know, it's like four times more expensive over there. And a lot of the benefits that we have, the social programs, carrying the debt loads that we carry, carrying the, you know, every president, I don't care if it's an R or D, carrying a deficit, you know, imbalance, raising the debt ceilings, is because of the world, the majority of currency floating around the world and being used in transactions was a U.S. reserve currency. What happens when that last foundation for our overbearing insanity with our economics is gone? What happens if only it loses 20%? I don't know what the point will be where it just goes boom, you know, and I'm sure there's much smarter people than I am that you could research on that, but I haven't heard anybody really say. But every one of them, the world economic expert says, the dollar reserve currency is going away. When that happens, doesn't mean the U.S. economy is gone, but it means all the fluff, which is about 65-70% of our society, it's over because we won't have the money and we won't be able to continue to sell our debt. In fact, China quit buying our debt, what was it, last year? And so now we're in a trade war with them because we got no way to buy their crap. You know, $500 million or $500 trillion a year. How are we paying for it? Printing it out of thin air, baby. You couldn't run your family like this. What makes you think you can run a freaking country like this? So here we are, probably the most important topic next to foreign policy there is, and probably the most misunderstood topic. And I really hope, and you are not going to get this listening to the show one time. You've got to go and listen to Schiff. Listen to Boom Bust on RT. They have great people on there. Listen to, you know, that crazy guy in England. You know, I mean, all of them. Rickert's, I mean, Rickert's probably one of the most brilliant analysts in the world. I mean, the guy is even hired by the Pentagon to come in and talk about financial warfare. The guy is brilliant, written many books. His last book, The Death of Money. You know, if that ain't a clue, he's one of the most respected guys in the world in his knowledge base. You know, been there at the Fed level, been there with the big banks that would were the first ones that would get the money coming out of the Fed. You've got to educate yourself because it's coming. The question is, what's going to happen after it hits? I don't know. I really believe, and I've said this a thousand times, it depends on who's in Congress. It depends. It'd be nice to have a good president, but it also depends on who's in Congress. Because if your Congress and your president do not understand that we cannot continue to run this country, all these other issues that everybody argues about 24 hours a day on Facebook, okay, mean nothing if you don't have an economy. You've got to get this figured out, and you need to start voting for people into office who are not part of the problem. You need constitutionally sound economics people like a Justin Amash, you know, and others, but just as a classic example because he's a economics guy. So this is a hell of a conversation, and I'm going to turn it back over to you, and then we'll roll from there.
All righty then. Yeah, I think you were spot on there, and for all of you kiddies out there in the radio land, listen to that again, including the opening. You know, I don't put these long clips together because it's fun. I put it together because you got to hear this stuff in context. And remember, the reason that you get all that information that maybe you didn't check out, maybe you don't have the Ron Paul channel, maybe you never watch CNN or MSLSD or RT or Press TV, maybe you don't know who Jim, who Roberts is or Rickards or Schiff. We bring you this stuff because we have no advertising on the show. And the reason we have no advertising is because we pay to do this show. But nobody knows that this show exists unless you tell them. So when you see it out there on Facebook, share it. You see it on Twitter, retweet it. And don't just put it on your wall or your own timeline. You can put it all over the Internet. It doesn't even have to be on Facebook. Just get the word out. But nothing works better than a personal invitation. Tell someone to check it out. And basically what Chris and I are doing, we're not telling you what to do, all right? You got to figure out what you got to do. We're telling you that it's a crappy situation. We're in a collapse. It's not coming. We're in it. It's just going to accelerate. And when he said accelerate, I think Chris used the word hyperspeed was the word he used. We're going ludicrous speed. We're going to be plaid pretty soon. It is going to be so fast you won't know what happened. And most people in this country are completely unprepared for it. If you don't get other people on the so-called right, and what do I mean by the right? Because the false left-right thing is just crap. People who tend to be Republican, people who are constitutionalists, people who are libertarians or libertarian-ish, people who are constitutionalists, people who identify as conservatives, social conservatives, Christian conservatives, actually all Christians should be on the right. This is the coalition that can help fix the problem. We're not going to prevent the problem. Those days are over. The problem is happening right now. It's only going to get worse. The question is, how quickly do you recover? Well, if you're running around like chickens with your heads cut off, fighting with each other, you're not going to recover. It's going to be centuries before you recover, if ever. That's what you have to work on. And if you think it's all about voting, you've lost your freaking mind. In fact, voting, for the most part, doesn't count for anything because not enough turnout is there. People only show up uninformed the day of, and when the turnout is that low, which is why both parties like to suppress the vote, they can cheat, and they do cheat, and they will keep cheating. And they also hedge their bets. Do you really think that we wouldn't be in this friggin' mess if somehow or another Romney were elected? Do you really have any delusion that we're not going to be in this mess if you make Mitch McConnell the Senate Majority Leader? Come on, people. The problems are far deeper. And remember that all of the shows are available anytime. So if you want to re-listen to this stuff, you go to blogtalkradio.com/libertiesthunder. All the shows are there. Just click on the hyperlink, which is the title. It plays right in your browser. And if you go below the scrolling graphics, you right-click on download, and you get an MP3. You can listen to it in your MP3-enabled device. You can send somebody an email. You can burn a CD and take it to your Tea Party meeting, your Campaign for Liberty meeting, your Republican Party meeting, whatever. The important thing is learn this stuff and get it out there. And the whole point is we are not going to agree on everything. If you're looking for people who agree with you on everything, you're a friggin' fascist. That is not how liberty works. Get over yourself. Liberty is about you living your life the way you believe you ought to live your life and ordering our corporate life together under certain broad principles where there is order, where government is part of our society, but the civil institutions, especially the individual family and the local community, are the most important things. We use government to create these conditions, not to provide us with stuff, not to give us things, because a government that gives you things can also take them away. All right? That is what we're talking about here. You have to get people aware, because stuff is going to get very, very uncomfortable. We're talking about 1971. Do you have any idea, any clue, what the average salary in these United States was in 1971? $6,500. $6,500 was the average salary, and most people lived pretty good on $6,500. Do you know what it cost you to put gas in your car? 36 cents a gallon. 36 cents a gallon, you made $6,500 a year. Today, the average salary, today the average salary is somewhere around $40,000, and the average price of gas is around $3.80. That means that since we eradicated the final tide of gold, the gallon of gas, and this is, by the way, the petrodollar gas, meaning that we still have more or less hegemonic control over energy transactions, although that is disappearing, has increased by 1,000%. Just think about that. In 43 years, the price of a gallon of gas has increased by 1,000%. If salaries had increased at the same rate, the average salary in America today would be $65,000. It's 40. That is a huge difference. See, that's how inflation works, and this is what people don't understand. This is what people don't understand. When they increase the money supply, they create inflation. Inflation is the increase in the quantity of money, the number of dollars that are out there, the number of units of account, whatever currency it is. Without a commensurate increase in wealth, you have more money chasing fewer resources. That is what causes prices to go up. Inflation is not rising prices. That is the symptom or the result of inflation. Inflation is a monetary policy manipulation conducted by a private banking cabal and foisted and enforced by our government upon the rest of us. And what you have to understand is when they do this, asset prices are bumped up. Prices of goods and services go up, but your wages, although they do also increase, do not increase at the same pace, because when you have counterfeit money, which, let's be clear, Federal Reserve notes are nothing but counterfeit money. It is money that is printed based on nothing other than the guns of the United States of America. It's counterfeit. When you counterfeit money, those who counterfeit it and those who receive it first make out like bandits. They are thieves. They are plunderers. By the time it filters through the system to the so-called wealthy, you know, the $250,000 wealthy, those aren't wealthy. That's someone who's successful, but they're not really wealthy. And then it filters down to the rest of the middle class, which is disappearing, and then finally it gets to the poor. By the time it hits 99.9% of us, it has been made worthless by the excess quantity that has come into the system. The velocity of money never works out in the favor of anybody who is not connected to the counterfeiter, the Federal Reserve Bank, the federal government, the Wall Street banks, and the military-industrial complex. That is how it works. which is why your wages, even though they increase in numbers, the nominal increases in numbers seem exciting. You look at your 401k and you're like, woohoo, this asset bubble is great. My 401k is bigger. It's not bigger. It's only nominally bigger. In real terms, it's less, much, much less. Look at the price of beef in the store. Wait till you see what happens when more of these deals Chris was talking about start decoupling from the dollar. The price of energy in this country will be dramatically increased. Now, those countries that are either controlling our foreign policy or beholden to us will linger for a while. BRICS is strong, but they're not that strong yet. They're getting stronger. And, you know, one of the things, ancient rule, Sun Tzu wrote it thousands of years ago, when you are strong, appear weak, and when you are weak, appear strong. So the Chinese are telling us they don't have any gold while they're buying tons and tons and tons, and your government is telling you we have the gold where there probably is very little, if not none at all. And what happens is when that shift occurs, either because we put too much pressure with our bad behavior on them, or they feel strong enough that the loss of the U.S. market and the crash of the bonds is less of a risk than maintaining this current scam, the whiplash will be unbelievable. And people in this country aren't prepared. If you think what's going on in Ferguson is a big deal, which it isn't, and stuff like that happens all the time, and nobody makes a big deal out of it, that is just prepping you for what is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And when that starts happening all over the place, most people have absolutely no moral grounding, and this includes most people who call themselves Christians or religious in this country. They have no sense of economic understanding. They don't understand how the government works. They're lazy, they're weak, they're spineless, they're cowards. And when things get chaotic, the only thing that they will want is to be fed and for order to be restored. And whoever promises them that, they will follow him like the Pied Piper. And that is when you will see, like Hitler, that is when you will see the full-on tyranny. Now, if you happen to go along with the system, it'll probably be pretty good for you. Now, it won't be as good as it is now, but you know, you'll have food, you'll have water, you'll have a job. It'll probably be a military job. You'll probably have to do service across the globe somewhere, killing all the other people who are pissed off at our system. But for those of you who believe in the old republic, in the Declaration of Independence, in the Constitution, for those of you who believe that your Bible is not just a book, that there is a person, that there is someone you have to follow. Your religion is not just some rituals you engage in on Sunday and holidays like Christmas and Easter. You will find that you will not be welcome in this system. Because they're going to ease racial tensions and economic inequality and gender gaps. They're going to ease all those politically correct things if you're willing to hang up all the stuff that really matters. Your faith, your freedom, your patriotism. Replaced by nationalism, subservience, and fear. And, of course, pleasure. Remember, 1984, everything was inverted, right? Freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength, war is peace. We're practically there. It's happened slowly, and you've bought into it. And if you don't get your heads out of your asses soon, you will not be able to handle what comes next. We can still recover relatively quickly if we start doing the right things yesterday. Do you think that's happened? Sure, Justin Amash got reelected. Walter Jones, Jim Holtzkamp, still got Cruz and Lee and Rand Paul. But you didn't get McDaniel. They stole that from you. Sure, you got rid of Eric Cantor. By the way, tomorrow's Eric Cantor's last day. Bye-bye, little Eric. Buck off. And you still got Boehner. You still got McConnell. All the Republicans that are going to take the Senate this coming November, they're the same old, same old. They're the ones that delivered this mess to you. They're the ones that delivered the White House to Obama. They're the ones that delivered you Obamacare. You haven't done enough. You better get busy. By the way, Alaska primary this Tuesday. Better bust your humps for Joe Miller. better do it. All right, Chris, back to you.
Very good. Wow. You know, we've done a lot of shows, but we did that show on the Weimar Republic and the rise of Hitler and why it happened.
Yep.
And that was, and I'm not saying, oh, it was us, so it was great, but I'm saying it was a great show, and you were really good, and I'm okay. But because there's something missing in America, and I'm not saying everybody, but I'm saying a big chunk of Americans. They don't learn how to critically think anymore. They don't learn history anymore. They grow up in public education, which is just about worthless. You know, where the whole, you can get into the whole issues of, you know, broken homes. I look at people around me, what occupies their time and what's important to them, and none of the important things are important to them. And I know that, you know, I share this frustration on my group because I think, God, there should be 10,000 people on here by now, the stuff that we cover, because we don't do the news of the day. We pick the most important things that are going on in the country and outside the country, and we focus on them, and we work on them, and we break them down, and we bring in resources, and we try to educate, because that's really, you know, what it's about, is education, because we don't do it in this country anymore. People don't understand economics. People don't know that we have, you know, 1,100 military bases around the world. That we're an empire that grew while you were sleeping, and busy working, and busy raising your family, and busy reelecting the same assholes into power over and over and over again, who lie, and then spend millions or billions of dollars to get reelected, and you go, ooh, well, that's my team, and then you put them right back in power over and over and over again. And if the people of a republic are not educated, moral, you know, that care about some fundamental principles, that care about the rule of law, that care about sound economics, that care about a true civil society, not this bullshit the liberals like to push, you know, around the world while they're blowing up other countries and toppling leaders. They love to talk that civil society crap. But the things that, for us who are old enough to remember when our society was stable and you could walk down the street and go trick-or-treating and you didn't have to worry about getting molested or stolen, you know, that wasn't that long ago. I've lived in two different countries, both of them on the same continent, both of them called the USSA. USA. Freudian slip. And it happened pretty damn quick because I look at my grandparents' generation, born at the turn of the century, my parents' generation, you know, born in the 30s, my generation, you know, 50s, 60s, you know, my son's generation, you know, that knows that really their awareness as an adult was 9/11 forward, and then this next generation that's coming along behind him. And I think my only reason my son knows what he knows is because we, number one, I worked my butt off so he could be in private school growing up. And number two, we educated him like my parents did before me. You know, my mom was really into history and sociology and what, you know, cause and effect. And she was always educating us. My parents were very involved in our childhood. And a lot of that's missing. You know, a lot of it's missing because first, we went from single income to double income society to a triple income society to survive, and our system started breaking down, and the family unit started breaking down, and so we just don't learn anymore. Now, there's a group of people out there in this country, and a lot of it has to do with certain leaders, you know, like the Ron Paul movement, the Liberty movement, and the Internet and things like that, but there's a group of people that get it. Very constitutionally minded. They know what's broken. They know what's evil. They know what's good. They know that we're you know, an empire around the world, doing some really, really, really questionable things in our quest to maintain control of a world that is not really ours to maintain control of, and destroying our economics. And there's a lot of people who do get it, but they're not big enough numbers yet to vote these bastards out of power. And so the masses who spend their, you know, their time and get their information from Fox News and CNN and the radio talking heads, and they don't do the research, they don't have the foundational understanding of economics and foreign policy and the rule of law and the Constitution, which are not really that big of things, but they're really four important ones. They're the ones that are voting these people back in power. And you know, I say this all the time, and that's probably why they call me doom, but I think it's going to have to crash before people wake up. I don't like saying that. You think I enjoy that? You think I enjoy coming to a conclusion at my age, living in this country, and seeing what it was like, what it could have been and what really is, and to wake up and go, wow, I don't think people are going to get it. I think people are so self-absorbed, so lack of the ability, you know, the desire to even learn and to use their brain and to step outside the box, turn off the frickin' television, turn off the Xbox, you know, cut back a little bit on the partying and the good times and the entertainment and say, you know, I need to be a citizen again, or for the first time, you know, because it's a mess. And the show is kind of an economics show. And it's, and you know, we could talk about economics till we're blue in the face, and we'd probably just glaze people's eyes over with it. But it's really important to understand we are at the end of a very bad, corrupt economic system that never should have been put in place. It was broken when they did the Bretton Woods because they still had a fiat system attached to it, so it wasn't an equal. They didn't have it locked into gold. Politicians and Wall Street and the rest and these guys, you know, in the stock markets, they don't like to talk about gold because they can't play this speculative game and make all these gains if the dollar was attached to gold. It goes back to that concept that when you had $20 and it was $20 of gold attached to it, you couldn't turn that $20 into $100 because that's what they do. That's what a fiat system does. The Fed prints it. It starts flows into the primary bankers. They start multiplying it. It goes to the next level. They start multiplying it, all the creditors, the banks, the credit cards. Pretty soon you take $1 that's printed, and it's $1,000 in the market. People don't get that simple thing, Rex. And you wonder why all it takes is a half a point or a 3 points in the market, a hiccup on a day, and you could crash our whole economic system. The reason that happens, it shouldn't affect it. 3, 4, 5, even 8% change shouldn't affect it if you had sound economy. But whenever your whole system is multiplied by thousands of times in risk and speculation, and it's just this wild ride on cheap money that's printed or at the end of a button, an inner button on a computer, you know, and then there's a hiccup out there or there's a flux in the market or there's a lack of confidence, like Rickard says, you know, we're backed by one thing in this country, confidence. And if the confidence goes, it's over because we're not backed by anything else. We have nothing stable behind it. Now, you could argue, and you get into economics, and you can argue about, well, some of the stability is, you know, do we make things, land, resources, all those, you know, workers? Yeah, those are all resources and stable units. But how many people are working? How many people aren't working right now? How many factories don't exist in America anymore? How many new businesses? We are on a decline for new businesses being created, which creates more new jobs. And if businesses, startups are going down because people don't want to take the risk or can't afford it, or just like me, who has 10 good ideas, but I'm going, why in the hell would I do that? Why would I put myself out there if it's going to crash again, you know, this year or next year or the year after, probably next year at least, you know, why would I put myself at risk and all that time and effort? You already got risk when you start a new business. So with Obamacare, debt ceiling increases, the Fed printing money, business people are just going, whoa, these people are nuts. You know, and a lot of them have moved overseas. You know, there's an outflow. The U.S. is one of the only countries in the world that actually follows its citizens all over the world to make sure they can get their taxes. Because most countries in the world, if you work overseas, you pay taxes in the country you're working in. The U.S., you get to pay taxes overseas, and then you get to pay them here, too. That's how screwed up our economic system is and how fragile it is. And so we have a record number of U.S. citizens who have wealth and money actually giving up their citizenship. A lot of people don't know this stuff, but I don't know. I guess it depends on what you want to focus on. But, you know, if you got $10 million and you're like looking at the U.S. going, well, it's going to crash. I'm tired of losing money. These bastards aren't fixing anything. Bastards by Congress. I mean by Congress. And you got 10 million bucks you don't want to lose, and you send it overseas, and they start chasing you down to get your money over there. Pretty soon you're like going, hell, I kind of like it where I'm at. I could be a citizen here. Did you ever think that people could think like that? But I'm telling you, people do. And if you look at most of the major big investors, including that bastard Soros, who has, you know, crashed several countries, he's betting against the U.S. stock market. He's moving his money offshore. You talk to Schiff, all of his, or I don't know if all of them, but a majority of his investments are emerging markets, you know. I mean, you look at Singapore, you look at China, you look at Hong Kong, you look around the world, and these are blowing up, you know, economies. Just, you know, free market, limited regulation, limited taxes, and businesses are flocking to them. And what do? More regulations, more taxes, more socialism, more people on food stamps, borders wide open. Let's bring let's put another 11 million people on food stamps and welfare. You betcha. Let's just destroy this system. And you have to ask yourself, you know, after a while, I mean, there's a certain amount of corruption and ineptitude in Congress, you know, just by the nature of the people that we elect or people who get into politics. But you got to ask yourself on the other side, the conspiratorial side, is, God, does somebody really want to destroy this system? Because every move they're making is accelerating us towards that action. And the sad part is what you and I have talked about for however long we've known each other, is that people won't engage in the process to get these people out of office and get some decent people in office that may or may not end up corrupt. I don't know. I don't know if it's that hard. Well, maybe it is. It's a lot easier than it used to be.
I got stuff to do. You know, got some
barbecue.
I'm comfortable.
Baseball
I got TV.
Season.
I got internet. I got food. I got gas. You know what, Chris? You know what? You know what the average price of renting a place to live in 1971 was? $150 a month.
I was going to say $100, yeah.
$150 a month. You know what the average new house cost?
$25,000.
$25,000 for a new house. Granted, it wasn't one of these 5,000-square-foot thingies, but still. You know, this is what you're not understanding, because you're like a boiling frog. And it's been happening to you slowly and gradually, and they know this. They realize that this has been going on since 1789 with the Jacobin Revolution in France. And then they had the Communist Revolution in Russia, and Nazi Germany. They've been doing it over and over again. They realized that when it happens so quickly and so revolutionary, people react to it. They've been doing it to you for a long time. They're going to be doing it to you for a little bit longer. I mean, we could crash tomorrow, but I doubt it. I think they're going to extend this for a while. And so conditioned, generational conditioning, that you won't even notice when it happens. That's what they've done to America, the late, great United States of America. Now, the question is, are we going to allow them to erase us while we still appear to be here? Or are we going to do something so that when this finally ends, we can restore what used to be? And it won't be the same. Forget your nostalgia for you know, the 1950s and Leave It to Beaver and forget your nostalgia. It's not going to happen. The principles can be revived, but the future is going to be something else. And believe it or not, the future is going to be dramatically shaped by the Sino-Russo alliance. Get to know Russia and China, because they're the new boys on the block. And it's not like the Soviet Union, which was never really powerful enough, other than their nukes, which we probably gave them, you know, spies and all that kind of stuff, but just never never had the same power that we did, because we had an economic engine at the time, and they were a failed system. This time, you are the failed system. And the ones coming online, they're hungry. There's a lot more people there. Remember, this planet has 7 billion people on it. It's 320 million of us are Americans. So the numbers are not on our side, and the behavior is not on our side. And you realize war is already here. And people say, oh, you know, I don't see a world war. I don't see a global war. There's no World War IV, blah, blah, blah. We're already in it, people. We are already in it, just like this gradual curve that they're doing with the money and the tyranny and the socialism. They're doing it with the war. It's already underway. It'll get bigger. It'll flare up here and there. It might even go nuclear. But this war is very, very serious, and it's happening right now. Right now it's currency wars and trade wars with some proxy wars in certain regions for resources. But as, quote, the enemy, which – let's face it, the enemy is really in Washington, D.C., but the Chinese and the Russians get a little bit more grounding, a little bit more interconnected through BRICS. Things are going to escalate. And let's be clear about something. It's not likely they're going to start the wars. You don't start the wars when you're doing well. You start them when you're not doing well, when you need to plunder. And we're getting there. And the neocons, they love war. So here's the thing you have to take away from this, and we're going to go into a 15-minute clip because, believe it or not, we've only got 30 minutes of live time. This is important stuff. You have to pay attention, and don't think you have to be an expert in economics to understand this stuff or understand fiat currency. This is understand the basic concepts and realize that you just have to say enough stuff. Don't throw up on somebody who's never heard this stuff before and freak them out. You got to ease them into it by letting them know that, look, you know, the money we have is debt. And the debt has been increasing so much, it's going to drive the prices up, and we've been exporting it to the rest of the world. They're getting sick of it, and it's coming back here. If we don't correct what we're doing here, it's going to fall apart, at which point it won't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat. It won't matter if you're a libertarian or a conservative or a liberal or a socialist progressive. It won't matter, all right? It'll be misery for all of us. All right, now the odds of you convincing some kind of, you know, Obamaton 6 years into this mess that they should suddenly become a conservative or a libertarian is probably zero. Don't waste your time. But you do need to work together with people who identify as conservative, as Republican, as libertarian, as constitutionalist, and as Christian. Christians have to understand what it says in 1 Timothy. The love of money is the root of all evil. You have to understand that Jesus overturned the tables in the temple of the money changers. You have to understand that the objective morality to which Christ calls you is not something you impose on other people. It is something you propose for them to follow because of who you are in your heart. And if you think that electing a douchebag like Ricky Santorum or some huckster like Mike Huckabee is going to solve your problems, you're out of your friggin' mind. You have to do the heavy lifting yourself. And in order to do the heavy lifting yourself, you need to be free to associate, free to exercise your religion. That requires liberty. And that puts you on the same side as libertarians who don't identify as Christian. And by the way, a lot of libertarians do. Think of Dr. Tom Woods and Judge Napolitano and Dr. Ron Paul and Dr. Rand Paul, who does free eye surgery for people as his Christian call to charity. So learn to get along. and quit being afraid of people that are different than you. We're supposed to be different. We're supposed to be unique. We're just supposed to agree on broad principles. And we know what those are. Now, this war is happening. The economic war is well underway. Get people acquainted with it, because just because they don't see the negative effects in a dramatic way doesn't mean they aren't there. And it doesn't require too much thinking to get beneath the surface and see the problem. So wake up. Wake people up. This is important stuff. And make sure you check out last week's show, too. We started this Fatal Mistakes with Fearfully Manipulated. Do not give in to fear. Understand how financial malfeasance is controlling your day-to-day life. And we'll do some more on this theme to get people empowered to wake up the rest of the sheep. Chris, you want to throw anything on there before I get in the clip?
No, go for it.
All right, this is a 15-minute clip. It's 30 minutes live show left at the top of the hour, 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening in your browser, Blog Talk Radio will cut you off. The only way you can continue to listen to the rest of the show will probably go at least 30 minutes past 11, is to listen on your handset. You'll have to call in 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. And when you call in, if you don't push the number one button, I won't bring you on the air. So you can actually just listen. I will not bring you on the air, so don't freak out about that. You just call in and listen. If you want to talk to us, push number one, and I'll screen your call in the next 15 minutes, and we can talk after this. But remember, anytime you want to listen to this, anytime you want to share these ideas, you don't have to agree with everything we have to say. The whole point of Liberty's Thunder, the only reason Chris and I do this, is to get people to start thinking, start understanding the problems, and quit falling for your little clique's little brainwashing. Oh, I'm an evangelical Christian, and so we have to support someone like Mike Huckabee or Ricky Santorum. Oh, I'm a libertarian, you know, it's Gary Johnson or bust, you know. I like Ron Paul, but Rand Paul, you know, he said some things I don't agree. This is the kind of stupidity that is killing us. All right, you cannot get 100%, 80% will do, and frankly, it's a numbers game. You have a conservative libertarianish foothold in the right wing of the duopoly. They've caused some problems for the establishment, but they can't do it alone. You need to send in reinforcements, and you need to be working at the state and local level with your sheriff, working on establishing your local committees of safety. You need to get to know your neighbors. You need to change the rules, and we do need to change the culture. So that's the work that's ahead of you. Pay attention, because what's going on out there beyond these borders is pretty friggin' significant. And it has a lot more to do with money than it does with a wall in Gaza or a fabricated Islamic State or a false flag airplane shoot down. Pay attention.
Generals gathered in their masses.
It's a long and winding road, and it starts now. Look, the first BRICS summit was in Yekaterinburg in Russia 6 years ago. Now we have facts on the ground, on the airwaves, and all over the world. This is I would say this is the beginning of the implosion of the 1944 Bretton Woods Agreement. This is a development bank by emerging powers. It's based on the Brazilian Development Bank. Many of these beautiful stadia that you see during the World Cup, they were financed by the Brazilian Development Bank. So it's financing of infrastructure by the BRICS themselves, among themselves in five countries. Then they can start lending to other countries as well. They can help to industrialize Africa in the long run, and without all these conditions imposed by loans by the IMF and the World Bank. So it is an earth-shattering device.
I wanted to check with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, or who we fondly call PCR. Now, Dr. Roberts is a co-founder of Reaganomics and has also been an editor and columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Business Week, and Scripps Howard News Service. I first asked him what he made of the whole BNP situation. Here's what he had to say.
Well, whose law did they break?
U.S. law.
Not a French law.
No.
No. You see, what? Look, I'm not an expert on this, but what my feeling is that the United States applies its law to all countries and says everybody, regardless if they're a sovereign state, has to obey our law. And because we announced that there were sanctions on Iran, if you, a bank in an independent country, finance business with Iran, we are going to penalize you, and if you don't pay, we're not going to let you conduct operations in the United States. So I'm not sure that the bank has broken any law because, in my opinion, the United States government does not have the option of dictating law to sovereign countries. But it's been doing it for a long, long time. It did it to Switzerland. And now they're starting on the Commerce Bank in Germany. They're trying to do the same thing to it that they just did to the French bank. I think that part of this is that Washington uses American clout over other people by threatening them to be excluded from the American market in order to hurt those financial institutions, in order to advance the financial imperialism of the American banks. So when they beat up on Barclays, they beat up on the French bank, they beat up on the German bank, then Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Citibank, Bank of America, they can sort of move in easier on those, on the territory of those banks. So I think that's also part of it. In fact, it could be the main part of it. But I don't think the world should accept the fact that the United States government can decide what countries their banks, these other sovereign countries, what the banks of sovereign countries, who they can do business with.
You've said that you see the dollar's importance diminishing over time. Is that right?
Yes, I think it has to diminish over time, and primarily because of this sanction thing. Because, you see, if you're a country and you're not part of the dollar payment system, then no sanctions can be applied to you. And there's real no benefit any longer of being in the dollar payment system. It grew up at the end of World War II because the United States was the only country that had an economy. All the rest were destroyed. And so how were you going to settle international payments? You looked to the strong currency of the country that actually dominated manufacturing, trade. And so that became the world money. But today, countries have recovered. There are many countries whose currencies are just as valuable. And there's no reason not to settle trade in their own currencies. It's actually very costly. For example, Japan and China to settle their trade in dollars, because if the Chinese buy something from Japan, then they have to pay a fee to convert their currency into dollars, then they give the dollars to Japan, and then Japan has to pay a fee to convert the dollars into yen. So what is the point of these countries doing that? There's no reason any longer. And as the United States increasingly, I mean to say Washington, in order to print money to pay its bills, in order to impose sanctions on the activities of countries that it disapproves of, I think more and more people will leave
with the dollars that we print. And to the extent that we anger countries like Russia, or maybe on a bigger scale, other countries that might be sympathetic with Russia's predicament and might be upset about the way we throw our weight around and might be upset that in holding dollars and perpetuating this dollar cycle, that they're really emboldening the United States to do this. And there are a lot of nations that might regret or resent, rather, the power that we wield basically using their weapons. And so I think that all this, what's going on in Iraq, what's going on in Russia, Israel, and what's going on financially with the American government harassing foreign banks, fining foreign banks, enforcing FATCA, making all sorts of financial institutions outside the United States, beholden to the United States, doing all this work, spending all this money to enforce our tax laws abroad, I think we're pissing off a lot of people that really we need to be sucking up to, and it's all accelerating this day of reckoning that I've been preparing for anyway.
A very interesting take. Nobody has kind of put it together that way. And I am worried about the, they're suppressing. I mean, there's been a lot of work. I know you're not in this camp, but people like Paul Craig Roberts, who's a former assistant treasury secretary, has done a lot of work saying that, they're suppressing the price of precious metals. The debt's going up. Gold should be going up, but they're not. What say you about the price of gold? A lot of people are upset. They bought it $1,600 or $1,900, which it's not really a trade. It's what you're talking about.
That we just had. Even though we're going to revise it down, I think that's the high print of the year. Even if they revise it down below 3, I think Q3 and Q4 are going to be bad. And I think that's when, at the end of the year, the Fed is going to have to acknowledge that, once again, it's wrong. It overestimated the economic strength that is not there. And, of course, rather than reassessing the wisdom of what they've been doing, right? Because it hasn't worked, right? They have diagnosed the economic patient. They come up with a cure of printing money, artificially low interest rates, QE. That cure doesn't work. In fact, that cure is the reason we're so sick, because it's not helping us. It's hurting us. But they are not going to acknowledge that. They're not going to figure this out. They're just going to prescribe more of the same. Yellen is going to say, we just need an even bigger dose. The patient was sicker than we thought. That's why it's not responding to our monetary medicine. So we need even more, right? We're going to get even more money printing. And again, it's not going to help. It's going to make the situation worse.
So you think by the time they start making these revisions on the second quarter here in the third quarter, you're saying that they're going to pour gas on a smoldering fire to get it stoked back up. What will happen to precious metals investments and things like that?
Well, that's when I think we really start to see some strength in the gold sector, because all the naysayers that have been betting on a strong recovery and a tighter Fed, they're going to have to throw in the towel. They're going to have to acknowledge that they were wrong. But, the interesting thing is, year to date, if you remember how bearish all of the experts were in December 2013, January 2014, about gold for this year, how everybody was writing the obituaries, all the Goldman Sachs, the Societe Generale, gold.
700 an ounce, that kind of stuff.
Meanwhile, gold is doing a lot better than the stock market this year, and the best performing stocks are the gold stocks. And, they still have a long way to go. But even based on what they've done thus far, 2014 has been a good year for gold and an even better year for gold stocks, and it has not been a good year for the U.S. stock market, despite all of the fanfare with which we rang in the new year.
Going to be weakening considerably into the end of the year, to the point where the Fed is going to be forced to admit that the economy is not as strong as it thought.
Therefore, it needs more stimulus. It needs more help from the Fed. They can no longer continue with the taper. They're going to have to pause, or if they actually ended the QE. But remember, even if they end QE, it's not really over. Because the Fed is always printing money and buying bonds, even if they're not doing it as part of an official QE program, because they're still reinvesting all the interest on their portfolio. They're still reinvesting all the maturities. Every time a bond matures, they don't actually ask the government for the money. They just loan it right back. So that is continuing. The Fed is not even talking about shrinking its balance sheet and asking the government to repay any of the money the Fed has loaned it, right? But I think that they're going to officially launch a new program. And because remember, going into 2015, it's going to be a very political year. They're going to start primaries. All the presidential candidates are going to start throwing their hats in the ring. And remember, Janet Yellen is the most liberal Fed chair we've ever had. The biggest Keynesianist, the biggest liberal socialist, whatever she is. No Republican president is going to reappoint her. Right? So her only chance of having a second term is for a Democrat to be in the White House. And so she's got a lot of selfish vested interest in doing what she can to help the economy. And she believes that what helps the economy is printing money, right? She's wrong, right? She thinks helping government to grow is what's going to solve our problems, even though it's going to make those problems worse. So she's going to pull out the stops. I mean, it's going to be monetary pedal to the metal as far as Janet Yellen is concerned. So there's a lot more stimulus coming. All this talk of interest rates, you know, when is the Fed going to raise rates? That's all going to be pushed aside. And meanwhile, the inflation, the official government measures of inflation that don't even come close to accurately measuring how bad it is, those official measures are going to get worse. So you're going to see the CPI well north of 2%, moving above 3%, 4%, and the Fed is not going to care. Yellen will do nothing about it. She may play a little lip service to it, but she's going to say it's temporary, it's transient, it's noise, it's good for us. She's going to come up with one excuse after another. But anybody who thinks Janet Yellen is going to do anything about inflation, that she's going to do anything to restrain it, doesn't understand Janet Yellen, right? She is going to create inflation. She sees it as a magical elixir, right, to cure what ails us. It's the snake oil that she's selling, but she doesn't think it's snake oil. And so when the market figures this out, you know, the dollar is going to collapse. You're going to see a significant down move in dollar, and you're going to see a lot of people buying gold, not just, you know, in the United States, but all around the world. Because as we print money, that's going to put more pressure on the Europeans, on the Japanese, on the Chinese to print money. Eventually, they're going to come to their senses, and we're going to win the race to the bottom, right? We're going to win the currency war. But in the interim, there's going to be a lot of collateral damage. A lot of currencies are going to suffer, which means a lot of people are going to seek out refuge in gold and silver.
The trading are all moving to Shanghai. They're rewriting the rules.
Well, it makes sense. Look, the savings are there. The productive capacity is there. The economic freedom is there. And just like America, you know, when we became the most powerful nation because we embraced freedom in a way that had never been embraced before, and we became wealthy because of our free markets, we had all the gold, right? That's why the dollar became the reserve currency, because we had so much of the world's gold. But we've lost all of that, and it makes sense that the nations that have gained what we lost are now going to take the gold, right? The gold is going to flow from the debtor nations of the West, right, the welfare states, to the new freer markets, dynamic savings producing nations in the East.
Correct. 1950, the United States had 20,000 tons of gold. Today we have about 8,000 tons. So that tells you the story right there. In the next liquidity crisis, I go all the way back to 1998, mm-hmm. when long-term capital management collapsed. That was a hedge fund collapsing, mm-hmm. jeopardizing the world, mm-hmm. and Wall Street bailed it out. Now come forward to 2008. Now Wall Street's collapsing, jeopardizing mm-hmm. the world, and the central banks bailed them out. In the next crisis, soon to come, it'll be the central banks and the sovereigns themselves who are collapsing.
The ultimate crisis isn't going to be the liquidity crisis, but an excess of liquidity, because all that money that's being created, that's the crisis.
Correct.
Because now the money collapses. See, everybody is worried about the asset prices going down. Oh, the stock market comes down, the real estate market comes down, the bond market comes down. But they forget, what if the dollar crashes? What if all the money they print to prop up all these asset prices collapses the currency that everybody actually wants? Because
Correct.
You don't really want the assets. You want what you can buy when you sell them. You want what you can buy with the income that they produce. And if you can't buy anything because they had to create so much money to prop up the values that it's practically worthless, that is the real crisis, right? And that is why people need to have gold. Because when that crisis hits, that's the one place really, really for sure, that they'll be able to hide. But I still think if you have real tangible productive assets in other countries, you know, things are still going to have value. I mean, when you have a currency crisis like that, it's the paper wealth that evaporates.
Sure.
I mean, the factories are still there. The resources, the plant and equipment, that productive capacity is still there.
Right.
The question is, who's going to own it?
Yeah.
And who's going to have claim to the production?
Oh, boy. Okay. A couple different things. And those two guys right there sitting in the same room is awesome, because they're probably two of the sharpest guys that I know of. There may be other people. I was actually doing a little scanning and research, and one of the things, you know,
that's
we were
Rickards
talking
and
about.
Schiff.
Yeah,
Rickards, right?
Schiff.
Rickards and Schiff.
And,
yeah.
And one, I'm sorry, I should have said their names. Maybe people didn't know who they were. We play them a lot, so it's normal to us. But one of the things that they talk about both of them, and I love what Schiff said. He talks about it ain't going to be a liquidity crisis. It's going to be everywhere. We have trillions and trillions and trillions. We don't even know, but I don't know how many people remember an article that came out, a few years ago about somebody exposed that the Fed had printed like $15.3 trillion, and we don't even know what they did with it. Well, what they did was they shoved it into the European markets and, you know, to balance the inflation that was coming out, or the hyperinflation. But one of the factors you always have to keep in the back of your mind, anytime you're studying this stuff or reading an article or trying to piece this together or get your brain wrapped around this, is you have to remember that if all things were normal, just going along as they are, the way the U.S. is just driving this country right into the ground, you know, taxes, regulations, printing money, bad fiscal responsibility, you know, government gone wild, $3.6 trillion a year, you know, federal budget. I mean, just insanity, selling debt, you know, $17 trillion and climbing, a couple hundred trillion dollars in unfunded liabilities for our kids and our grandkids' futures to deal with. Just that alone, catastrophe. But in all of the conversations, and I'm hearing it more, and I'm finally hearing it more and more and more because I've started studying this thing quite a while ago, is you've got to remember there's the BRICS things going on. And that is all these countries moving away from the U.S. dollar. This is the straw that broke the camel's back. Our back is already broken. We're already going down. Our economic system is coming to an end. They're going to have to, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to erase the debt, start over, accept the losses, you know, and just create a new currency and rock it back up, you know, reset a switch. Who knows what they think their solution is. But it's never going to be the same because that reserve currency is toast. Because everybody's moving away from it. The only people who aren't moving away from it are people who are so embedded into our system that they're betting that we will, you know, that the U.S. is going to win. And it isn't going to win because it's set itself up for failure. Now, if that was a plan, you know, you could go down that avenue, or was it just, you know, the end result of corruption and assholes that get into politics that don't know how to read the damn Constitution? You can argue either side of that or a little of both. But here's the thing. The acceleration, I'm seeing more and more and more. I'm posting more articles from more economics people from around the world who are really getting into this conversation of the impact of BRICS and the BRICS banks and the BRICS nations and the emerging markets that come with them and how the world is moving. I think you're going to see this. It'll be a common conversation just about everywhere except for the U.S. because the U.S. doesn't want you to know what's coming, because that's just like with the housing bubble. You know, I remember looking at the housing bubble going, this is going to pop. I've been here before. You know, I was in a housing bubble in the 80s in Alaska, and then right after that, they had one in the lower 48. That's what we call you guys down here. And, and I'm like going, I'm driving down the road going, who in the hell is going to buy those 500 houses in that subdivision? You know, it's like, where in the hell are all the people going to come from? They were just running on cheap money, building as fast as they could, getting as much as they could. Everything was loans and debt. And everybody I listened to or studied in economics said, it's going to pop, and it's going to be devastating. I knew it was going to, you know, but I've also been through several crashes in my lifetime as an adult. And I know that we typically recover fairly quickly. Well, this time we haven't recovered. We don't have the industry. We don't have the right people in Congress. We don't have the right president. And we have these insane people like Bernanke and Yellen in control of the Fed. You know, we've never printed money like this. So, you know, on its own merit, if you just, like, look at America, everything is destined for a crash that they've been doing. Then you add that straw on the camel's back, and it's spelled BRICS. And that's the thing you have to remember, that there's that hyper weight in that single straw that is also putting downward pressure on a system that's already moving towards collapse. Back to you.
I love gold.
Yeah. What Chris just said is very, very important, and what you heard in that clip is very, very important. We are in the midst of a global war. It has currently got minor skirmishes, unless you happen to be there. You know, if you're in Iraq or you're in Israel or you're in Gaza or you're in Ukraine, it ain't minor, or any number of countries in Africa. But generally speaking, these conflicts are not like the Western Front or anything like that yet. But the currency and economic and trade wars are bigger than they've ever been. And the belligerent this time is us. Now, here's the hard thing to wrap your head around. Being the bad guy. Yeah, accept it. All right? If more Germans understood that they were the bad guy, maybe World War II wouldn't have gone the way that it did. All right? Your government is not you. Your government is not the American people. Your government is supposed to be for, of, and by the people. It isn't. It isn't, it isn't, it isn't, and you let it happen, and you're responsible for that. But don't identify what they're doing with who we are. The gut reaction most of us have is to support our team, whether it's in electoral politics, supporting the Democrats if you're a Democrat, or Republican if you're a Republican, without questioning what they're doing, or to support our country, my country right or wrong. Well, yeah, my country right or wrong, but not my government. Not when it's appropriated. Not when it's held captive by foreigners. Not when it's held captive by transnationalists who don't give a crap about us other than are using us to solidify their resources. This is a big deal, and you had better get used to it. You have to remember something. We're coming up to an election year, and you're worried about, you know, how are we going to help Rand, or who's going to rally, you know, the Republican Party, and will we get a constitutionalist or a, you know, libertarianish or a Tea Party guy as opposed to Jebby or, goodness, Romney again or something like that. That's important stuff, and you better be working in your precincts at the local level on that. But keep in mind that money, media, and war are going to be played as games to keep the empire going and also to bend your head. If you don't increase the numbers and get people to go beyond this one-stage thinking and start looking deeper and understanding the inevitabilities that are going to happen and that we have to start fixing them before the break, because if we wait until after, none of us will be alive to see the recovery. We have to start fixing it before it breaks, all right? And stop thinking you're special. You're not special. Just because you supported Ron Paul, you're not special. Just because you were bold enough to vote for an alternate party instead of Mitt Romney, you're not special. Just because you might understand how the Federal Reserve works, you're not special. You have been given more knowledge and awareness than most people. And all that means is more is expected from you. The responsibility falls on your shoulders heavily than those who are ignorant. And you have to wake up the ignorant. And what you have to explain to them is that we're, like what Schiff said, the liquidity issue is not a problem. We're going to have plenty of liquidity. We're going to be drowning in liquidity. Think about it. If you have a glass of water, 12-ounce glass of water, and you put one little drop of green food dye in it, the water will tint green. Does that mean that you have increased your drop of green food dye to 12 ounces? Still have one drop of green. It just looks like 12 ounces. It won't do any more than what it did before you diluted it in the water. That's what they're doing to the currency. That's what gold prevents them from doing, because you can't make gold. You can mine it, but that has a cost. You can fake it, right? But it's easy to detect fake gold. Gold is an element. It is gold. You can't fabricate it. There's no alchemy. So it checks their ability to increase the quantity of money. Now, you can have credit. But, again, it's limited because there's a base of actual gold. And the issue is not so much that there's competing currencies or other things going on. That's up to the market to decide. The issue is that your government is limited in how much money it has access to because of gold. That's the point. When they have unlimited resources, they will come up with all sorts of crazy stuff to get people to vote for them by buying them with Social Security, with Medicare, with Obamacare, with food stamps, with you know, the lunch programs, public education, they come up with all this wonderful stuff to give away because it costs them nothing, And, of course, there's always war. That's a great one. You know, the entire mental psychosis of Keynesianism is predicated on the broken window. Well, war is nothing but the broken window writ large. You break stuff, that you know, and then it has to be rebuilt. So you pay for the machinery with which to break stuff, and then you pay for the machinery with which to build stuff. And whoever sells it, whoever finances it, makes money hand over fist. Oh, you know, millions of people die. But they don't care about life. That's the problem. They don't care. They don't care about you. They don't care about anybody. They only care about themselves. And you've let them take over your country. This is what you have to fix. Pay attention to these guys. And all the clips are in our group, Militia of Liberty's Thunder. And if you go to our Facebook page, that's Liberty's Thunder on Facebook, and you like the page and click on Get Notifications, when you click on the show pick in the comments is every single clip, the full clips, and articles that we talk about on the show. Get informed and get that information out there and get people aware and get them to wake up. If we don't increase our ranks and get people to realize that our appropriated government is spending us into oblivion, we're not going to be able to find food, water, or any other goods when the money spins out of control and goes to that ludicrous speed that velocitizes at such an incredible rate that we're going to spin off China and Russia, because they'll just, at that point, the risk of them attacking the United States dollar will be far less than trying to just simply set up an opposing system. That's where we're heading. And if you don't get people to understand that now, it'll be too late on the other side. That's what you have to do. And we've got a caller with us. Kelly, you were live with Rex and Trog. What did you think about what Schiff and Rickards were saying there in that clip about the currency and the global financial wars?
It needs to be said. That's for certain. Was it your show or somebody else? It is one of the most powerful forces, if you will, to the lustful powers that be with their lust for power. It is the prize, really, having control of the currency. Man, that's just a great summary. I think Ron Paul said something similar to that. So, and by the way, Rex, I am special.
I didn't want to insult you. I mean, you are. We like you anyway.
Well, it's because I went to special ed. So that's why I'm special.
I wanted to share a victory story.
I'm getting an echo right now. I hope you're not getting the same echo.
I don't hear an echo, Kelly. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry. Well, maybe that was the space between my ears. All right. Or maybe Rex's ears. Okay. I joke around a lot. Okay, here we go. In Michigan, in the 11th Congressional District, the Liberty Republicans stormed the Oakland County Convention this week. And the Liberty Republicans outnumbered the good old boys 2-1. It was 204-115, and it's just so stunning because they got a new chair in Oakland County, Matt Maddock, and they were able to remove a whole bunch of pre-selected establishment delegates to the state convention and get their own slate of liberty-minded people to the convention. And it's just absolutely stunning what they did, and they used the precinct strategy. If you're familiar with the precinct strategy, my buddy Brian here, he has been a longtime libertarian, but he jumped over into the Republican Party and got elected as a precinct captain. Now, precinct captains are an elected position. You know, you might have a few blocks that you might have to walk and say, hey, I'm running for precinct chair. Well, the precinct chairs, when they get elected, they go to the county convention, and just exactly what they did, they voted the good old boys out. They voted their good old boy slate to the state convention, and they put their own people. This happened also in, it was either Kentucky or Tennessee. And basically, if you want to run for precinct captain, of course it depends on the state, but typically there's like maybe nobody running against you. It's an open position. Sometimes you might have one or two other people running. But a simple campaign of knocking on doors, hey, are you going to vote? Yeah, hey, you know, I'm your neighbor, blah, blah, blah. Vote for me as precinct captain or precinct chair. And that's exactly what they did, and they got in 2-1.
I've got to get to a conference call here pretty soon where we're nationally trying to do this. If we had about 300,000 people willing to do this, we would literally take over the Republican Party at the county levels by booting out, you know, good old boys and rhinos, and the endorsements would come for who? Oh, that's right, liberty-minded Republicans. The good old boys,
yep.
They don't know what to do when there's all these numbers. And so,
well, that's
it's
exactly
really
what happened in Virginia, in Virginia's 7th, you know, with the Republican Party there, and then all that hard work, and little Eric Cantor, his last day's tomorrow. Bye-bye, Eric. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. Yeah, that's what people have to do, Kelly. They have to realize, and look, here's the thing. People hear this stuff. Well, you're just saying, you know, the Liberty candidates just took over that Republican precinct or that state. And they start freaking out thinking that now all the pot-smoking sodomites are going to turn the Republican Party into Gary Johnson Central. Okay? That's not what's going to happen. All right? Because the pot-smoking sodomites tend to be with Gary Johnson and the Libertarian Party. Liberty-minded candidates or libertarian-ish candidates, for the most part, are people like Justin Amash, a Christian family man, very conservative, who just happens to think neocon wars and fiat currency are destroying this country. And until people understand that we can't get proud, you know, don't confuse jingoism with patriotism. Just because we're blowing the world up doesn't mean that we're doing good stuff. And just because we have a lot of money because the Fed prints it doesn't mean we're any wealthier. It means we're less wealthy and we're less secure by blowing things up. Once people understand those two things, and Chris says it all the time, economics and foreign policy, if people understand fiat currency and neocon foreign policy that is designed to create a hegemonic power for other interests, not our own, then getting someone who's a liberty candidate like a Justin Amash or a Rand Paul is a blessing. It should not put fear into your run-of-the-mill Republican. Would you agree with that, Kelly? And then we'll go to Chris.
Well, define Republican based on the word republic, which is a charter, which is a constitution. Hey, that's a good idea. The Republican Party, has it become a repugnant one party, or are we going to have to take it over? I'm sharing this with you because I learned about this a couple of years ago, and it is a very hands-on thing that we can do. Guardians for Liberty has a website where we're trying to do this. But that's another story. But, yeah, this is a hands-on. Instead of watching Fox News and getting depressed, you become a precinct captain and, you know, show up a few times, watch what happens. This is what precisely was needed to get Ron Paul into office, and they kept storming the caucuses and the precincts, and the good old boys kept trying their tricks. But Iowa, for example, Ron Pauler is the chair of Iowa, of the Republican Party there. And it is turned into an ugly war because the rhinos that don't seem to like the Constitution and solid money, they're getting their power pulled out from under them. So, I mean, this is an exciting, oh, my gosh, they did it. And I just found out, was it Friday when they did it last week? So makes me want to come back and be a Republican again, but that's another story.
I'll never be one. You're funny. Hey, Kel, I haven't talked to you in a long time. Hey, you know, this reminds me of conversations that us three and others, part of our clique, had over and over again. One of the things that Rex and I have pounded into the ground was trying to get Boehner replaced, trying to get Priebus replaced, and trying to get people to show up and get a hold of their committee members to make sure that the rules weren't bastardized going into 2016, because everything they did at the convention, which we've had this discussion a lot, was to basically shoehorn, you know, their fake Republican, Democrat, progressive into the to win the primary. And for us who were aware, you know, we reported the hell out of this. I mean, between three different radio shows that I know I frequented, we exposed all of it. And, you know, and the way they treated Dr. Ron Paul was just disgusting. And I used to say that doesn't matter if you agree with him or like him or don't like him. You should be offended by the breaking of rules and laws and Democrat tactics, Chicago Democrat, Saul Alinsky tactics inside the Republican Party, who is supposed to be the party of, you know, the republic, like you said earlier, you know, the rule of law, smaller government, you know, fairness, Christianity, you know, or whatever, not Christian, but you know what I mean, religious freedom and moral responsibility. That's supposed to be what, at least that's kind of what they act like they're supposed to be if you read the damn document. And, you know, they acted like a bunch of socialist communist hacks. And that's what really got my goat. I mean, really got me, because it wasn't about Ron Paul, even though Ron Paul is a great man, and his movement across the world is still growing. I mean, and I said across the world, I mean it. But, you know, it isn't just that. It was a matter of what these sons of bitches did to the party and what people allowed to happen, which comes back to something I talk about all the time, is if you sit on your butt and you listen to Fox News, first of all, if you listen to Fox News and the radio talking heads, you have no idea what's going on in the economy or in foreign policy. And those are two, and I say it again, those are two of the most important issues facing our world and our country right now. All these other things people get caught up in, nothing. When it crashes or we're in a huge war, none of that crap's going to matter. You're going to be looking for food and trying to keep your family alive. So you need to wake up and get off the little shit and focus on the big picture, which is then Dr. Paul's message forever: economics, foreign policy, economics, foreign policy. That's why they beat the crap out of him and lie about him 24/7 on Fox News, too. So,
oh, yeah. Well,
here we are.
Beautiful video, YouTube video on Ron Paul warning us. Same theme. Economic stability and stay out of foreign wars, 83, and then they had 83, 88, I think it was 93, 98, all the way through 2013, he kept saying the same thing. And it's stunning. It's what the American people want, but the establishment, of course, has to play their games and change their rules at the National Convention from
sure.
a six-state plurality
and the media.
To an
and
eight.
The media.
Yeah, to an eight, because they fear a brokered convention, because the Romulan may not have been elected had they had a broker. Oh, we just kind of changed the rules, you know. Yeah, whatever. But if we have time, I want to go
into
something.
They stole it.
Oh, yeah, they stole
they
it.
Stole
you know, well,
it.
Right. And then they had the gall.
That's what people need to realize.
I know. And then they had the gall. Even my sheriff, he's a constitutional sheriff, but he's like, oh, Ron Paul, he never went third party. What are you talking about? Then I explained
what
happened at the convention. He's like, yeah, but he was believing – the sheriff here was believing that the Ron Paul people was why Romney lost the election. It's like, no, Romney lost the election because he was Mitt Romney, and they cheated for him, and he found out, and we're not voting for him.
Yeah,
and when he realized that, he's like, oh.
Well, the diverting responsibility is
our party is Southern.
Go ahead.
Hold on here. Let's hear from Romney.
Go ahead.
You know, in some ways, we kind of had to steal the Republican nomination because our party is Southern, evangelical.
He had to steal the nomination.
He actually
there
said
you
that.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yep.
One of those little recordings in a meeting that he didn't think somebody was doing. Cause
no, this was
right.
In the Mitt documentary. Here, listen to
oh,
it again.
Oh, that's right.
He said, you know, in some ways, we kind of had to steal the Republican nomination because our party is Southern, evangelical, and populist. And you're Northern. And you're Mormon, and you're rich. And you do not match well with our party.
They tried to play it off as a joke, but, I mean, let's face it, there's a little bit of truth in jokes. And he stole – they know this. Look, Ginsburg, the lawyer for Romney, basically set it up so that – he and Sununu set up the rules so that it would steal the nomination. Boehner, of course, helped them with that. And that's exactly what they did. Now, that doesn't mean – that Romney wouldn't have gotten the nomination with a brokered convention. It's entirely possible he would have,
right.
Because most Republicans are just morons. But the fact is that he would have been forced to be more conservative because of a brokered convention, and it would have at least given encouragement to all those masses out there who still eat up Fox News as their, you know, conservative, fair and balanced bullcrap, to see the brokered convention and realize, holy crap, we can have a Reagan moment. That's what 76 at the convention was. They were like, holy crap, we nominated the wrong guy. 4 years later,
yes.
Reagan. That's what it needs to
yep.
happen. All right, well, we're going to run out of time soon, so Kelly, I'm going to throw it to you for, you know, whatever is on your mind or anything you want to plug and your final thoughts, and then we'll go to Chris.
All right. I wanted to plug something for the next show, if I can. I have discovered how, in the words of Attorney Montgomery Sibley, by codes, statute, and case law, the executive branch has committed a coup d'etat upon the grand jury. I have researched this extensively. I've been asked to appear before a grand jury on behalf of a private person who suffered prosecutorial misconduct. But there is still a big solution in the word presentment. And I did send that to you on Facebook. You'll have to scroll up and find it. But it is stunning, and there is solutions to this. And essentially, without a grand jury indictment, no one is to be held to account, which means if the executive branch can prevent a grand jury indictment, they can do whatever the hell they want, like Ted Kennedy, who got away with murder because he was never indicted by the judge sealed the evidence. So I've discovered some things and some solutions, and I'd love to, another day, talk more about this, because it's really powerful stuff, and they've tried to hide it from us, but it has been found. I call it cracking the code.
Well, and I think that what you talk about there is also when they talk about the powers of the states and nullification and all these different tools that our founding fathers put in as fail-safes. You know, they gave the House a very important tool, and that tool was the power of the purse. Unfortunately, because most of the Rhino Republicans have given up their testicles a long time ago and are part of the same corruption as their buddies on the left, they haven't used that for the last 5.5 years. So it really puts the pressure on the people. And on one side, I go, it's terrible that we've gotten here. On the other side, maybe that's what we needed. Maybe we needed this much disaster to occur and the upcoming disaster, especially economically, and depending on the level of war these idiots are willing to take us into, that it wakes people up. I don't know what it's going to take, Kelly. I know that there, and I said this earlier, I know there's good people. I knew nothing about the Liberty Movement until around just before the convention time is when I started researching it. I come from a different background, and that's when I started researching it, you know, and because Dr. Paul had, you know, traveled through and survived the whole primary and was heading for the convention. And so I said, well, you know what, this is a serious movement. And I saw the pictures and all the blackout, you know, of the huge crowds he was drawing. I mean, filling coliseums at colleges, you know, and all this stuff. And I said, I don't understand this, but I understand movement. I understand momentum. I understand, you know, that type of dynamics. And I wanted to understand what was behind it. And I have a lot of respect for what he did and what he exposed and what he's been saying for 40 frickin' years and standing on that principle, the Constitution, the rule of law, sound money, state sovereignty, you know, not voting for things that are unconstitutional, which I've read different attorneys, constitutional attorneys, it's somewhere like 80-some percent of the laws are unconstitutional. You know, we live in hell right now in this country, and we do not because of the politicians, because politicians are always assholes. Who in the hell would want to be a politician if they didn't have alternative motives anyway? I mean, it's just, it attracts weird people. But it isn't just because they're a bunch of corrupt. Right, but you know what I'm saying. It attracts a weird group of people. The problem is the American people are asleep and have been for a long time. That's the problem. We need a Reagan moment, and we need it not just in the political environment, but we need it in the nation. And I don't know what that's going to take.
Well, let me throw this out to you. Yeah, let me throw this out to you, and I got to get on this conference call. I just want to throw out a bowl of encouragement, if you will. Ron Paul, you know, what's his name? Juan, news commentator on Fox. He said, yeah. Ron Paul was the father of the Tea Party.
Juan Williams.
Yeah, thank you. Juan Williams, father of the Tea Party. Well, what he did running is get people connected. And as they get connected, they get in mass. In mass, they do things like what happened in Michigan, and is either Tennessee or Kentucky, and then in Virginia. And it's going to keep happening as we get connected, as we move forward, as we encourage one another. This will keep happening. Right now, the American people are starting to wake up. They have suffered terrible discouragement. We have to empower the American people. That's one of the things I'm doing at the grand jury and to write a petition. But as we empower, as we have victories, more people will come out. And you look at the voting, rates right now, what are we, like 30% or something stupid, really low? But as we empower people, connect people, we'll get those numbers up, and it'll be a lot more liberty-minded people, and we are going to have more victories. That's what's exciting. Empower people to get off the sofa and get going. You get them out of the defeated state, and you connect them, and you know, Ron Paul did an awful lot to start this, and people, it's like he started a massive, you know, 12-cylinder diesel engine that's running by itself now. And so it's exciting to be a part of this, and I hope people do a lot more and check out the precinct strategy. So with that, I'm gonna not violate the eighth deadly sin, which is don't hog the microphone.
All right. Well, Kelly, thanks a lot for coming on and sharing that stuff with us, and we appreciate it, and keep us apprised of what's going on out there.
All right, great. Talking, guys. Bye.
All right, buddy.
Folks, well, just before we go to Chris's final thoughts, just want to point out what Kelly just discussed and is very important. And, look, one of the problems with libertarianism as a philosophy, and I'm not talking about any particular libertarian or the Libertarian Party, it's libertarianism as a philosophy, which is in many ways sort of the structural ethos of these United States from way back before the War for Independence, is that it gives so much in the way of opportunity, equality, non-aggression, liberty, that man, who is flawed by nature, and you know, that's the concept of original sin in Christianity, but if you're not a Christian or not even religious, just look around. The empirical evidence is outstanding. We tend to do corrupt things, even the best of us. That's just empirically accurate, which is the reason why the Constitution was devised the way it was, to use power to check power, because a single one of us, even the best of us, can be trusted with too much power. That's the whole premise. But what this philosophy does is it creates so much equality, and Alexis de Tocqueville talked about this, that it becomes the highest virtue. And through that equality, especially when added with abundance and prosperity, you end up with atomization of individuals. And you lose sense of community. You lose sense of society. You lose sense of nation in the way of patriotism, love of country, not love of government policy, but love of country, love of your countrymen. And that is how they have divided us the way we're divided. And what Kelly was talking about, and it's interesting that it's coming through the liberty movement, more so than through the, quote, social conservatives, is this cohesion that Ron Paul basically put together, this cohesion of working together despite our differences. And that's the thing about conservatives who are libertarianish, okay? I'm not talking about the fringe, the, you know, the sodomite pot-smoking Gary Johnson fringe. We're talking about regular conservative with libertarian tendencies like Justin Amash and Rand Paul, is that we're very different. Our individuality is striking. But we agree on those broad principles, and working as a community, working in tandem, working together on those issues is what causes the victory. And that is a very important point that he made, and you have to realize that we can get along broadly if we focus on those overarching timeless principles of liberty and order and virtue without imposing ourselves on everybody else in areas that we can have prudential disagreement and even severe theological differences. Because the whole point of freedom of religion is that we don't have to impose it on each other. And if you are a good witness to your faith, you will show others the truth of your conviction. You don't have to force them.
Lead by example?
Imagine that. Who taught that? Anyway, I just wanted to highlight that point that Kelly said. It's 11:15. Let's try to get out of here in the next 50 minutes, so we'll go to you for final thoughts.
All right. Yeah, I'm still – check your chat. I'm still laughing about what you said.
No, Kelly brought up a good point, and this is something that, and I think this is at a really, really important point, and it's something that hit me like a ton of bricks. Hey, that was a show we did. And that is this concept of this empire abroad being a mainstream focus inside the Christian conservative voting bloc in this country. That's the biggest frickin' lying sell job I've ever heard in my life. When I first started researching, really getting into foreign policy, and a lot of it, you know, was kind of a spinoff from, I mean, started obviously from 9/11 and then the war in Iraq based on lies, and then what the hell are we doing in Afghanistan 15 years later, and why did we topple a sovereign country, Libya, and what the hell are we doing in Syria, and you know, all that stuff. That was kind of a journey I was on. And I didn't really have a strong opinion about, you know, what is a conservative's position on these things? What is this, you know, why is Ron Paul always attacked? Because he thinks that peace and trade is a better way to make friends and keep friends and sound economics than blowing up the frickin' world and sanctioning countries and manipulating their banks and threatening them. You know what I'm saying? It was like there was this whole joggle of information that was coming at me, and I was churning, you know what I mean, like a laser beam through it. And part of it was to get the facts, and the other part of it was to form my own worldview. And that's something, the journey I had to go on. At least I was willing to go on the damn journey, which is an important point, people. You know, and the other point was I wasn't really aware that we had, you know, bases in 1,100 places around the world and, you know, 600 different military conflicts since the late 1800s and thousands of interferences and covert operations in countries all over the frickin' world. You know, I didn't really know. Yeah, you know, I'd grown up in the Cold War and, you know, got some of the spy shit and stuff like that, but I really didn't understand what was our foreign policy. And from that spun off to a show, another show we did, which was about the neocons arising. And that was really where the whole concept of when I started researching what in the hell are we doing messing with Syria, and then that exploded that whole, oh my God, there's so much shit going on just in the Middle East that the average American knows nothing about. I didn't really know that much about. You knew a lot more than me, but I was still on that search and seizure mentality. Then I started realizing that everything anywhere in the world that we do somehow always comes back to Russia and China, because those are our two biggest should-be partners, but our two biggest threats to a world-dominated U.S. hegemony, empire, Rome, that mindset. That led to this whole understanding of who the neocons were in the new American century and these crazy bastards, this preemptive strike mentality, responsibility to protect, all this insanity, all this list of anything they need to reach into to grab to go topple a country because the leader of that country wasn't doing what the U.S. told them to or whatever, you know, wanted to trade in euros instead of U.S. dollar for petroleum or wanted to create a gold currency or whatever the case may be, i.e. Iraq, Libya, Syria, Iran. And yet through this whole journey, and this is important, I know it's a little bit long, but this is important, through this journey, what I've seen on the right in the conservative Christian movement is a total lack of understanding about all the shit that goes on around the world, you know, based on U.S. foreign policy. And they're always the first ones to jump up and scream, yeah, blow them up, invade them, Putin's evil, Putin's Hitler, you know, oh, they're terrible, oh, China, 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 China. And I'd see this ranting and raving and anger, and I'm like going, you people are freaking insane. You call yourselves conservatives. You say that you want sound money, individual rights, a smaller government, state sovereignty, which is really a big, you know, part of the conservative mindset, the rule of law obeyed, And yet, in a moment's notice, because you stick your face in front of Fox News and you listen to the radio so-called conservative talking heads, you were the first freaking people to throw your Christian hands up and say, bomb them! We need to go in there! We need to kick their ass! We need to kill some people! Blew me the way, Rex. Absolutely the most disheartening thing that I've ever... Because I'm not a peacemonger type person. Zero part of my personality is. But I'm also a very fair, legalistic person, and I wouldn't go around punching people in the face because they looked at me funny, but if they crossed me and put me at risk or my family, I'm the first guy you want to call. I don't have a peace bone in my body, but I'm not a bully, and I'm not an asshole, and I'm not an abuser. And when I see, you know, like I was one of those guys that saw people abusing animals, I went crazy. I've got a soft spot in my heart for victims. And when I look at the victimization of the world based on these policies, and I see people claim they're Christians and claim they're conservatives, take this side, I'm thinking you people need to get a freaking reality check. And that's one of the reasons I respected one of the last guys to come on, you know, even know anything about the Liberty Movement, you know, is to look at this and go, what is wrong with peace? Why do we sanction countries? That's an act of war. Why did we invade the Ukraine and topple a legitimately elected government and then blame Putin? You know, you can think anything you want about Putin. Most people don't even think about it because they don't know shit about modern Russia. They haven't taken the time to study it or who Putin is or what he's done for his country or the respect he has around the world with many, many, many countries outside of the U.S. and their little clique. You know, the UK and the rest of these imperial people hanging on to a dying empire, you know, they don't even take the time to research it. They just watch Fox and they listen to assholes like Hannity and Oliver North the other day and some comment about Missouri, and he brings up Putin as a reference. I'm like, what kind of bullshit is that? That's all propaganda. You know, we got problems here in this country. Why are we spending our time trying to make an enemy who has 10,000 nuclear weapons? I mean, really, seriously. Well, I can tell you why. It's because of the U.S. dollar that's failing around the world, that's being moved away from because countries are sick of this imperial bullying crap that's going on around the world. And you think I like talking about this shit? I don't like sounding like I'm unpatriotic. This shit that we do around the world has nothing to do with U.S. patriotism or anything to do with the Bible I read or the life that I've lived in my life in business and fairness and equality to other people and fairness and protecting the little guy. It has nothing to do with that shit. And until conservatives wake up and Christians wake up in this country, we will continue to lose elections and we will continue to have war and we will continue to have debt ceiling increases. And we're going to have more welfare and more warfare because it's frickin' Republicans that you people back because they get up and scream about the evil of the world, and then you get up and scream, oh, we need to kill them all. What the hell is that? What's that got to do with America or patriotism or anything that this country was founded on? It doesn't. That's the problem. And these people, which is a huge chunk of this voting bloc, have bought into this shit. That's the problem. And it's sickening. Because I follow Syria. We got 200,000 freaking people dead and millions of people displaced and Christians getting murdered and massacred and raped and children with their heads cut off and ISIS, which is something we produced to go in there and take out Assad because he wouldn't let Qatar get a freaking pipeline through there that the U.S. wanted so they could poke Russia in the eye. It's all bullshit, Rex, every bit of it. And to see people jump up and down and looking at Facebook posts and look at people just fall right into that freaking war, hate war trap over and over and over again is freaking sickening. And if this is what the Republican Party is, then it needs to freaking go away because it's some sick shit. And people really need to wake up. I'm done.
Bam, bam. You brought out the big clubs on that one. Excellent. Yes, very, very, very good point. Real quick before I go into my close, just want to remind everybody, Tuesday, primary in Alaska, Joe Miller, make it happen. You know, Republican media nut jobs are finally waking up to it. Levin endorsed him. Palin finally endorsed him. So make it happen. Miller's the guy. Help him out if you can. You've also got Wyoming, and then next week you got Arizona, Florida, Vermont. Then the following week you got nothing. First week of September you got Delaware, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Rhode Island. So far, the 2014 primaries have been piss poor. You've had very little success, although the Liberty Republicans in the House all kept their seats despite massive onslaught from the establishment rhinos. Finish it out strong, all right? You know, yesterday's gone. Tomorrow may never come. You got right now. Do the right thing right now. And I think the takeaway that we always try to leave you with is the reality of the situation, all right? We are not doom and gloom, all right? We make that joke. We're not doom and gloom, all right? It is just that you look at the situation as it is, not as you wish it would be. Part of that Hegelian dialectic, part of that problem-reaction-solution paradigm, mass psyops that they're feeding you all the time through the Internet, through the television, through the print, through everything, through the culture, is to get you to suspend your thinking and to not look at the things that you find to be too frightening and to teach you how to look at things that you thought were hideous and find them not to be so hideous anymore. After 43 years of murdering babies in the womb, we're having intellectual discussions about when it is okay to kill a human being. They've done that to your mind. And I'm talking not from a theological standpoint, which is, by the way, if you're a Christian, you better be 100% pro-life, but if you're not, if you're a libertarian, you will undermine the very issue, the very fundamental basis of self-ownership if you think that it's okay to take someone's body simply because of its inconvenience and location. This is the kind of thing that's happened to your mind. So we try to lay it out. Do we know everything? Are we the smartest guys in the world? No, no, and no. But we do devote time and energy to this so that we can understand what's going on. And what is going on, the reality of the situation, is it sucks. That's why we sound like doom and gloom. But you have to understand that no matter how piss poor the situation that you have allowed to happen, you are responsible for what has happened, but today you're only responsible for what you do now. Look at it as it is. It's ugly. We're behind the eight ball, but there is victory to be had. Now, is a financial collapse inevitable? Yes. Is war inevitable? Well, look, it's already happening. All right, some things are going to happen no matter what. You can't stop them. The question is, can you delay them? Can you slow them down? Can you build a structure in your society and your government? Cover rapidly after this dross flows through the system, or are you going to wither and whimper away into nothing? Most people right now will be so whiplashed, so frightened by what's coming our way, they will look to anybody and accept any terms to have order restored just so that they can have food. Now, we've talked a lot about economics in this episode. Last week was fatal mistakes, fearfully manipulated. This week is fatal mistakes, financial malfeasance. I can't remember what we're doing next week, but I think it's festering militarism. But we've talked a lot about economics, and remember,
I love gold.
Well, we talked a lot about gold, and that's a good hedge for a currency collapse. So let me clue you in on something. You can't eat it. You can't drink it. And you can't defend your home with it. So keep in mind that gold is a great currency hedge if, A, you're trying to flee and go to a BRICS nation, although diamonds might be a better transportable thing, or, B, that you want to have something from which to recover after the whole thing collapses when we start rebuilding. In the interim, you got nothing but each other. You've got nothing but each other. You better start knowing who you are. You better start getting along. You better start making things real again. Look at the gloomy situation and look at the principles. It's amazing that we've made it this long in America. It's amazing that the Republic lasted 124 years before we started the century decline into the chaos that we're about to enter into. We're entered into it, but it's about to accelerate. But the beautiful thing is that if people can learn to get along on those broad issues, we can fight the entrenched establishment. And it's not some grand Moriarty conspiracy. It's not all Rothschild, okay? Yes, there are financial manipulators, transnational globalists, people like Soros and Rothschild. But don't forget that the corruption in the hearts of many politicians, many bankers, and many of us regular folk aligns with these dastardly deeds simply because we are corrupt. Get your head on. Stop thinking in utilitarian terms. Stop thinking in merely temporal terms. Stop thinking in merely conspiratorial terms. Stop thinking in one-stage cliches and start thinking about more important things. If you want to enter this battle and succeed, you have to have a purpose that is greater than yourself, and that purpose is God. And if you're an atheist, maybe it's time for you to rethink that, okay? And I'm not preaching to you. I'm not trying to convince you of anything. Everybody knows my position. I've talked about it a million times on this show. I'm one of those annoying Orthodox pre-Vatican II Catholics. But what I'm telling you is you're not going to succeed if you're merely thinking about your pocket. You're not going to succeed if you're merely thinking about your mouth or your stomach or your genitals. You're only going to succeed if you're thinking about something greater. And the United States used to stand for those things. We did it together. We were a force for good in the world. And keep in mind something. War is not going to end. Being a pacifist is basically allowing the bullies of the world to kill innocent people. So for you pacifists out there, you think it's a noble position, but frankly, you're being cowards and pussies and allowing the bullies of the world to go out and kill people. This place is war. There is always a war on planet Earth. It is a battlefield, and it is between the forces of good and evil. And the United States used to be one of the forces for good, and we've allowed evil in our hearts to penetrate our governments, the high places, the courts, the money, the banks, and now we're reaping the whirlwind for it. Right the ship. You'd better figure out what it means to be a virtuous person. You'd better figure out what it means to be good. You'd better spread that message, and you'd better band together and work to restore right and good and true in our country. Because financial malfeasance is a symptom of the corruption that we have allowed and the disorganization and disunity that we've sowed amongst ourselves by pitting ourselves against each other. And some of the worst people at it are your high and mighty libertarians who think that you have the answer for everything and you know the truth behind every conspiracy, which is impossible because they're secret. And the only ones that are possibly worse than you are those hypocritical, overly pious, so-called Christians who quote scripture verses to prove every point that they have, and they don't know Jesus. Get your heads out of your asses, people. This is serious, and this is not a time to play games like Mike Huckabee or Gary Johnson. This is a time for men of real virtue, men who stand for something that count and have an army behind them that they can lead to the front lines of the battle to restore liberty, to restore virtue, and to be that force for good in the world. That's why we have financial malfeasance. It's our own corruption. Learn. Know and figure out what your transcendent purpose is, because pretty soon it's going to get ugly. Shortly thereafter, we're all going to be dead. How will you be remembered, and what does eternity look like to you? These are the things that matter. These are the things to think about. And remember that those wealthy landowners, most of whom were Christians, laid their lives down, laid their property down, laid their fortunes down, and their sacred honor to secede from the greatest empire the world had ever seen up to that point. And the shift from the British Empire to the post-World War II American Empire was still in the Anglo-American sphere. It is not as cataclysmic as the shift that we may very well see soon from the post-Christian West to the rising global South and the BRICS nations. And keep in mind something. As you walk around and hide in your churches and think you're all high and mighty, there are more Christians under persecution in China
than there are in these United States. The first Christians are being slaughtered by psychotic Muslim jihadists in the Middle East with your money, with your weapons, and your blind support for Israel, which is a nation state that didn't exist before 1948. It was not in the Old Testament. Old Testament Israel is something else. Learn what that means. And I'm not saying that we don't support Israel, and I'm not saying that Hamas aren't terrorists, but what I'm saying is when Christians get caught in that middle of that fight, when Christians are in that vice grip, do you really think you're a Christian nation? Are you trying to prove Obama right when he said you're no longer a Christian nation? Because that's what it seems like you're doing. Get your heads out of your asses. Realize that the world does not hate you. It hates what you've allowed your country to become. And frankly, so do I. I live here. I love America as she is supposed to be, that shining city on the hill. I don't love a usurious America that is pissing away, printing money and sending it all over the universe in order to create inflation and chaos and arming people who want to kill other people for no reason other than they hate them. I don't like arming Nazis in Ukraine. I don't like arming jihadis in Syria. I don't like setting up and toppling governments in Iraq. I don't like invading Africa. Our forces are supposed to be used when people are genuinely in need and there is an American interest that some monster has to actually be put down before he ends up on our shores. But we don't create monsters, and we don't go looking for monsters. We're just always ready to fight them. Without the financial malfeasance, your foreign policy wouldn't be this dastardly. You wouldn't have the financial malfeasance if you had one iota of economic literacy. And you wouldn't have economic illiteracy if you didn't let corruption in your heart fester. Purge it. About face. Because if we keep going down this path, it is over, and it'll be on our shoulders. But we can fix it. The collapse is coming, and after that collapse, we could have a new American century of liberty and cooperation and freedom and sound money and free markets. But only if you do the heavy lifting now. We're happy to stand with you. This is Rex and Trog, signing off.
The thunder of liberty rumbles on.
You win! Find the
plan! The kitchen of the welfare state have told us they have a utopian solution, a peace without victory. They call their policy accommodation. And they say if we'll only avoid any direct confrontation with the enemy, he'll forget his evil ways and learn to love us. All who oppose them are indicted as warmongers. They say we offer simple answers to complex problems. Well, perhaps there is a simple answer. Not an easy answer, but simple. If you and I have the courage to tell our elected officials that we want our national policy based on what we know in our hearts is morally right, we cannot buy our security, our freedom from the threat of the bomb, by committing an immorality so great as saying to a billion human beings now enslaved behind the Iron Curtain, give up your dreams of freedom, because to save our own skins, we're willing to make a deal with your slave masters. Alexander Hamilton said, a nation which can prefer disgrace to danger is prepared for a master and deserves one. Now let's set the record straight. There's no argument over the choice between peace and war. But there's only one guaranteed way you can have peace, and you can have it in the next second. Surrender. Admittedly, there's a risk in any course we follow other than this, but every lesson of history tells us that the greater risk lies in appeasement. And this is the specter our well-meaning liberal friends refuse to face, that their policy of accommodation is appeasement. And it gives no choice between peace and war, only between fight or surrender. If we continue to accommodate, continue to back and retreat, eventually we have to face the final demand, the ultimatum. And what then? Well, Nikita Khrushchev has told his people he knows what our answer will be. He has told them that we're retreating under the pressure of the Cold War, and someday, when the time comes to deliver the final ultimatum, our surrender will be voluntary, because by that time, we will have been weakened from within spiritually, morally, and economically. He believes this because from our side he's heard voices pleading for peace at any price, or better red than dead, or as one commentator put it, he'd rather live on his knees than die on his feet. And therein lies the road to war. because those voices don't speak for the rest of us. You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance. And this is the meaning in the phrase of Barry Goldwater, peace through strength. Winston Churchill said the destiny of man is not measured by material computations. When great forces are on the move in the world, we learn we're spirits, not animals. And he said there's something going on in time and space and beyond time and space, which, whether we like it or not, spells duty. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness. We will keep in mind and remember that Barry Goldwater has faith in us. He has faith that you and I have the ability and the dignity and the right to make our own decisions and determine our own destiny. Thank you very much.
Trust the Republicans. Let me be clear, I don't trust the Republicans. And I don't trust the Democrats. And I think a whole lot of Americans likewise don't trust the Republicans and the Democrats, because it is leadership in both parties that has gotten us in this mess.
The establishment will grow more and more hysterical the more powerful Rand Paul and Ted Cruz become, and they will gain strength as it's obvious that they're among the few people willing to raise the right question. And I consistently have been on the side of having the courage that Rand Paul and Ted Cruz have. And I think it's sad to watch the establishment.
There are a lot of D.C. consultants that say there's a choice for Republicans to make. We can either choose to keep our head down, to not rock the boat, to not stand for anything, or we can stand for principle. And they say if you stand for principle, you lose elections. The way to do it, the smart way, the Washington way, is don't stand against Obamacare. Don't stand against the debt ceiling. Don't stand against nothing. I want to tell you something. That is a false dichotomy. You want to lose elections? Stand for nothing. Look at the last four congressional elections, 06, 08, 10, and 12. Three of the four, we followed that strategy. 06, 08, and 12, we put our head down, we stood for nothing, and we got walloped. The one election that was a tremendous election was 2010, when Republicans drew a line in the sand. We said we stand unequivocally against Obamacare, against bankrupting the country, and we won an historic tidal wave of an election. And then, of course, all of us remember President Dole and President McCain and President Romney. Now, look, those are good men. They're decent men. But when you don't stand and draw a clear distinction, when you don't stand for principle, Democrats celebrate.
Well, look, I'm a big fan of Rand Paul's. He and I have fought side by side on fight after fight after fight in the U.S. Senate, and I anticipate we'll continue to fight side by side. He's a terrific voice for liberty.
Imagine a time when the White House is once again occupied by a friend of liberty. And you may think I'm talking about electing Republicans. I'm not. I'm talking about electing lovers of liberty. It isn't It isn't good enough to pick the lesser of two evils. We must elect men. We must elect men and women of principle and conviction and action who will lead us back to greatness. There is a great and tumultuous battle underway for the future, not of the Republican Party, but the future of the entire country. As our voices rise in protest, the NSA monitors your every phone call. If you have a cell phone, you are under surveillance. I believe what you do on your cell phone is none of their damn business.